tonight's meeting is sponsored by MedicalCostShare.com, an alternative, a legal alternative to Obamacare. There's a flyer on the table out there, or if you just want to look, check out the website, MedicalCostShare.com. It's basically legally exempt to Obamacare. If you're self-employed, own a small business, work for a small business, it's something you ought to look at. It's less than half the price of traditional insurance. It is not insurance, but everything is described there on the site, and we want to let you know about the flyers. Speaking of Obamacare, today in the Washington Times, Obamacare sticker shock fears, this is the headline, feds plead with Americans to shop around. Because if you don't shop around, or you don't go to medicalcostshare.com, you're going to have probably a minimum of an 8 to 10% increase over 2014 for your 2015 premiums. And so if you're concerned about Obamacare's mandates, restrictions, increasing costs on you and your family, your business, etc., I want to take charge of your home health care. No networks. Go to any doctor legitimately, not like what Obama said. Check out medicalcostshare.com. All right. The first time I met Joel Skousen, the first time I heard him speak was back in 2000. He was at a preparedness fair. I remember him saying something about, him talking about conspiracies and the reality of them and critical thinking, importance of developing our own understanding, our own discernment through the Spirit, etc., for being able to understand what was going on around us and combined with common sense and that little feeling that you get in your gut. I hope that he'll talk about that tonight, because when he was on the Alex Jones show maybe a month ago, that was one of the best interviews I've ever heard Joel and Alex have. So, and I actually had a gentleman tonight say, "Did you hear that discussion with Joel and Alex?" I said, "Yeah, I did." Anyway, it was his favorite too. So, the interesting thing is that for a long time, many of you have been called names, been put down, because of how you believe or how you feel about certain things. And the reality is that challenging known liars for lying is not conspiracy theory. Okay? And when I say the word conspiracy, you automatically default in your mind, you'll say the word what? Theory, right? Conspiracy theory. You know where that came from? That came from the CIA. It was declassified. It came from the CIA after the JFK assassination. And there's an article that came out in Veterans Today last month, redone in National News. I just want to read a couple of sentences from it. It says here, if you're a conspiracy theorist, then you're crazy, right? Just the opposite is true. Researchers, psychologists, and social scientists, mostly in the U.S. and the United Kingdom, say data indicate that, contrary to those mainstream media stereotypes, conspiracy theorists appear to be more sane than people who accept official versions of controversial and contested events. The research showed that the people who favored the official account of 9/11 were generally more hostile. And so among the people who commented on news articles and those who discount official government accounts like events like 9/11, etc., and the assassination of JFK, outnumbered believers by more than 2-1. So you're not in the minority anymore. You're actually in the majority, which sounds kind of strange. I know you wouldn't believe it from your average neighborhood that you probably are in. But maybe that's only outside of Utah. I'm not sure. But perhaps frustrated, those who are anti-conspiracy commenters often showed anger and disgust in their posts. Also, it seems that those who do not believe in the conspiracies were just hostile, not just hostile, but fanatically attached to their own conspiracy theories as well. The researchers said that according to the anti-conspiracy holders, their own theory of 9/11, which, of course, is the official version that says that 19 Muslims, none of whom could fly commercial airliners with any proficiency, pulled off an amazing surprise attack under the direction of a man on kidney dialysis in a cave 7,000 miles away. But they hold true to that, like it's a religion, like it's, gospel. And then I already mentioned about the conspiracy theory about conspiracy theories, which is what the CIA put out to popularize the term conspiracy theory after the JFK assassination. By the way, a scientific poll was taken, and 84% of Americans, according to the New York Times and CBS poll, 84% rejected the official story of 9/11. Well, that's a pretty high percentage, don't you think? That means only 16% were hardcore on it. And I was in New York about a week ago, and I actually did my own little informal survey. I asked a couple of cops and a couple of people on the street, I said, look, I understand that 70% or 60% of New Yorkers do not believe in the official story of 9/11. Can you tell me your opinion? And even the cops, one of them said, he had kind of a smirk on his face and said, I'm on duty, I really can't talk about it, but, like that. Basically was his response. Everyone else said, no, I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. So here's a question for you, ladies and gentlemen. If they lied about it, and these are declassified conspiracy operations, Operation Ajax, Operation Paperclip, the Valerie Plame Affair, Operation Northwoods, the My Lai Massacre, Operation Gladio, USS Liberty. If they lied about those, and I asked you this last month, what else could they have lied to us about? There's a photo circulating around the internet with Obama and his arms. He's walking down the outside the Rose Garden with his arm around G.W. Bush and his other arm around Clinton. I guess they had a meeting together. And the caption under the email or under the photo says, if you think everything will be okay once Obama is out of office, you don't understand the program, unquote. Now, for you new visitors today, I know you're thinking, what is this guy up there talking about? Well, by the time Joe gets done, you'll think I'm lightweight, so I'm no toast. but even today on the Drudge Report, Bush was quoted about, recently he was quoted about Clinton saying, he's my brother from another mother. And today on Drudge Report, he was quoted as saying, they asked him what he thought about Hillary and running against Jeb Bush, his son, in the 2016. So it's already been anointed. That's probably how it'll play out. It'd be my guess. And he said, well, Jeb will win. What do you think about Hillary? Well, she's my sister-in-law. And you thought that they didn't like each other, right? So solutions. Joel will probably give us a bunch of solutions tonight, but the one thing that I want to impress upon you mostly is that for those of you who get frustrated and say, oh man, I go to these meetings every month and they tell us about the problems, but they never tell us about any solutions. Well, I would argue and suggest to you that becoming aware of your awful situation is the first major step for you to be able to have your own solution. And, we all need to disengage ourselves from the false right-left paradigm that, CNN, Fox, New York Times, Washington Post, Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Burger King, the whole false right-left deal. And by doing so, then we can actually begin to wake up other people. Because you can't really repent until you've hit bottom until you realize you've got to make a change. And this is the same principle here tonight. Or here in what we try to do here on a monthly basis. So I would encourage you to try to look for different news sources. You got to get off the teat of CNN and even Fox News. Did you hear the report a few weeks ago? I think maybe it was, you probably did, where even Fox News, the Forbes reporter came out and said, he admitted the White House told us shut down all news about the Ebola issue. And Fox, Sean Hannity, and others said, well, the Ebola story's over. We're done with it. Well, are we really done with it? I don't know. Who's to say? Maybe Joel will touch on that tonight. But I'd suggest you go to news aggregator sites like DrudgeReport.com, WorldNetDaily.com, Infowars.com, and even WorldAffairsBrief.com has a news aggregate website, which I didn't even know about until I saw it today. So just before I give the mic to Joel, I want to... you've got to understand the phony baloney, hey, we can all go back to sleep now because the Republicans won and everything's going to be fine and dandy. I mean, a lot of you in here get that false thing. Some of you don't, and you're like, what am I even doing here? Boehner and McConnell will take care of us. It's all good. Right? Am I right, Lola? Well, you already heard that they're not going to fight Obama on immigration. They're not going to fight him on his executive orders. They're not going to do anything about Obamacare. Has anything really changed? I mean, I'm happy as a hog that Harry Reid's gone, but you remember the Who song? Meet the old boss, same as the new boss. Don't get fooled again. Go Google that song and listen to it on the way home, or when you get home tonight. It'll help you understand. All right. One last point I wanted to make was on the whole Ferguson thing. I imagine Joel's going to be talking about this. Be very careful how you emotionally become involved with the Ferguson, the New York, the Cleveland situation. And I say that because the manipulators, the manufacturers, they're trying to turn this into a race war. I don't think there's anybody in here probably that's racist. There are some racists out there. Okay, fine, I get it. But the bigger problem is, this is not a race issue per se, in my opinion. This is my opinion. This is more of a police brutality issue, and there's a problem with the culture, with the hip hop, the gangbanger, there's a problem with that culture, and it's promulgated by guys who own white companies, like MTV and record label companies, and that whole gangster drug culture is promulgated to, well, there's a whole lot of reasons in the big conspiracy, the big picture that you can learn about on your own, but the reason I'm telling you this is, I really believe that the militarization of the police, shoot first, ask questions later, and I'm not talking about Ferguson per se, but you guys all saw what happened to that guy in New York, and you also saw, well, I was going to bring that up. That guy in Albuquerque they shot was a homeless man. He was white. His name was James Boyd. And then there was Kelly Thomas in California who was begging for his life, a white guy. They didn't play the race card. They didn't say, hey, you can't shoot me, hands up, I'm white. I mean, well, if you have police, and there are many, many good police, most of them probably are good. I was in New York City, and I kind of thought, you know, all these New York cops are going to be, like, trying to bust my head or something. They were so nice. They were so nice. I couldn't believe it. I'd ask them. They saw us looking at a map, and one of them came over and said, can we help you figure out which subway you want to go on? Well, yes, sir. Absolutely. And so, I mean, most cops are good cops. This is not a cop. This is not an us versus them thing. They're drilled into a mentality that it is becoming that. We need to make them our friends, but we do not need to bow down and take a billy club in the head, okay? That's all I'm trying to say. And Joel can expand on this a little bit, but they're hijacking this and trying to make this a race war thing versus a military police state against good people kind of thing. And if you think about that, it's going to challenge your paradigm maybe for some of you. But if you think about it long enough, I think you'll hopefully see that. So we're excited to have Joel Skousen with us tonight. Mr. Skousen needs no introduction around here. He's the author of 4 books and publisher of the World Affairs Brief. WorldAffairsBrief.com. He's a political scientist by training, specializing in foreign policy, as well as the philosophy of law, U.S. constitutional theory. His main area of research focuses on helping his readers understand the hidden globalist agenda behind U.S. foreign policy and domestic policy. Former Marine infantry officer and former fighter pilot, intimately familiar with security and defense issues, he knows how the political process works and the dangers it presents to the preservation of liberty. He speaks several languages and has contacts on the inside. So without any further ado, please join me in welcoming Mr. Joel Skousen.
So it's good to be with you tonight. I have a chance to speak to a lot of people around the world, and it's always good to be home. Don't get to speak very often here. In fact, I kind of have a policy. I don't speak at the same place more than 6 months between each one, just because I want to have something fresh to tell you. I don't want to just repeat the same thing. And I know I did speak to those of you who saw me at Utah Valley University at a preparedness conference, and I'll cover some of the same things, but everything will always be a little different. I've been told some new people, not just new to here, but who are unaware of what's really going on in terms of the bad news that you're very aware of. So I'm going to say a few introductory remarks. In my weekly World Affairs Brief, I try to concentrate on what the media does not tell you, because it's what they omit that presents the lie. When they don't tell you crucial information about what goes on, then you walk away from the news thinking you know what's going on. And there's some very important people, impressive speaking people, who assure you that this is the truth that they're telling you. But it's not the whole truth. In fact, they leave out the most important parts. If you are one of those that believes that Oswald was the lone assassin of JFK, you're sadly mistaken. It was a government hit on the president. CIA was involved. The mafia was involved. They have a seamless relationship in terms of assassins and hit squads that go forward. In fact, the one man, Mr. Files, who did admit to being the shooter on the grassy knoll, admitted that he worked for both the CIA and the mafia. They altered the body of the president in order to falsify the direction in which the shells came. They changed the windshield twice on his limousine, because the first time they changed it to falsify the bullet, they forgot that if you shoot it from the rear, it makes the opposite. So they got it wrong, and they had to change the windshield twice. This was the Secret Service. These people aren't there protecting the president. They stepped off the car. They stood back to make sure that they weren't in the line of fire. They knew what was coming. I could spend an hour or two just telling about the JFK assassination. RFK, his brother, Robert Kennedy, was not killed by Sirhan Sirhan. There were over 9 shots fired in that hotel. They carved out 9 bullets out of the kitchen cabinetry. And some of them were not 22s. His weapon was a 6-cylinder 22 revolver, and there were 38 bullets taken out of the cabinet. Martin Luther King was not killed by the lone assassin. He was killed for the martyr effect. He was going to be exposed as someone, a reverend supreme hypocrite, who was with prostitutes almost every weekend, including at his Nobel Prize ceremony, with dozens of prostitutes. This man was the greatest hypocrite in the name of religion. The FBI has 15 file cabinets that were secured away from a judge. And that 50 years has passed, and by the way, they haven't let anyone see what's in those 15 file cabinets. But I talked to Assistant Director Gray of the FBI after Martin Luther King was killed and after the files were sealed away in the National Archives. And I said, could I ask you generally what's in the files? I know you can't reveal specifically. And he said, well, I can tell you this. There are 15 file cabinets. 2 file cabinets are about his communist connections. Yeah, that was real. He did have communist connections. The other 13 cabinets are pure pornography. There are videotapes of his trysts with prostitutes, thousands of them. And that's why the judge sealed the record, so that they could make him a hero. And the American people knew what kind of man they were making a hero. That's why I will not celebrate Martin Luther King Day, and you ought not either. If you think the TWA was shot down or had an exploded fuel tank, you're very seriously mistaken. It was shot down by a Navy missile. There was a missile test going on, and that's why there was a drone seen flying horizontally over Long Island. A BQM, they knew the drone, etc. And what happens is, and I know this from my firing missiles, that if you have a target drone going and another airplane crosses over, that missile that has its own little radar in it, looking at that airplane, can switch lock if something crosses its path and starts to track the other one. And that's exactly what happened. That's why the Navy bolted the area. The Navy ships that were in part of that naval exercise suddenly at full speed steamed away. Now that's counter to all Navy doctrine. When there's an airplane or a crash, or a boat sinking, the Navy's supposed to stick around to rescue survivors, and they made a beeline to get out of the area so that the government could deny that the Navy was even there. But they were there. A lot of people saw the FBI when they came to convince people that you didn't see a missile. Their papers, they read over their shoulder, says, when did you first see the missile? And that was on the FBI papers, the interview papers. And if they did say they saw it, then they had this whole phraseology about how to convince them that they didn't see a missile. The FBI was found actually taking parts off the airliner when they put it back together. Anything that had missile residue, they took off during the night and put them in a separate room so the investigators couldn't find anything with missile residue. They ended up having to remove a dozen seats out of the mock-up airliner that had missile residue on it. If you thought Oklahoma City bombing was created by Mr. McVeigh with the truck full of fertilizer, you're kidding yourself. There were at least 2 major explosions, and that's why when the federal government finally gave you they had covered up the videotapes that they had confiscated from all the businesses in the area, the ones showing the other accomplices of McVeigh, the ones that showed just store shelves. But the video showed 2 shaking of the store shelves about 30 seconds apart. And so did the seismograph at the University of Oklahoma. 2 major explosions. And the CIA edited out, so there was only 1 showing when they release it. That's the way they operate. That's a cover-up. The government's in the middle of that cover-up. Of course, Oklahoma City Television had cameras circling the Oklahoma City building and found two other bombs and took pictures of them, showed them on the evening news until the CIA called them and said, you're never to show those again. I don't even have time to begin to go through each one of these, but I'm going to give you enough evidence to realize that, as Tom said, the government lies to you all of the time. If you thought the fall of communism was real, like 99% of conservatives, you're fooled. It was a carefully crafted deception. The communists never fell. It's historically impossible. When does a tyrant ever decide, without repenting, by the way, without repenting, say, I'm just going to quit. You know, this is too expensive. I'm just going to quit. When they have the power to take from anyone and put anyone in jail, I'm just going to quit and be benevolent and let you all be free. Well, Eric Honecker admitted on his deathbed in Chile that he got orders from Moscow to let the Leipzig riots go forward. Now, that's where the so-called 1998, where it started. In Leipzig, the students started to protest. The question I asked, which none of the media ever asked, well, what happened to change the fact that the students who wouldn't dare have protest the week before suddenly felt confident that they could go take to the streets without being arrested? Nobody asked that question. Eric Honecker said, Moscow gave us orders to let the Leipzig riots go forward. Now, every one of the student unions in Germany were infiltrated with communist cadres. And I'm sure they whispered around and said, let's protest. And once they got the order from Moscow, they said, let's go ahead and do this. And they gave them assurances that they wouldn't be arrested. That's how you get out in the street, and you're not afraid to do so. And that's exactly what happened. Ceausescu of Romania refused to step down. Honecker agreed, and he lived. Ceausescu was removed by the secret police and killed. So was his wife. And I was in New York at that time, and it was happening. And I talked to several Romanians who I knew there about the Iliescu, who was suddenly the anti-communist who was now taking over Romania. He's no anti-communist. He was second to Ceausescu until he quit a year before. That shows how much they were planning this in advance. You quit, you start becoming an anti-communist, and then we'll put you in a leader after it happens. And then we find out that you heard about Lech Walesa of Solidarity and the famous Polish liberty movement. He was a communist agent. He was just faking it, so that they could round up the people who, of course, were getting part of Solidarity. And you heard about the famous Václav Havel of Czechoslovakia, the famous pro-Western poet laureate of Czechoslovakia, also a communist agent. You never heard about that in the United States because that was spiked. But if you go over to Europe, as I did, and talk to the Poles, oh yeah, we all know about that. It was major news over here, not in the United States. There's a difference between Reuters in Europe and Reuters in the United States. And that means that there's a conspiracy to cover up the truth. There's a control system about the news. And as Tom alluded to, if you think that 9/11 was a conspiracy of jihadists taking over airliners, you have been fooled to a tremendous degree. We have more proof about 9/11 than almost any other conspiracy now. It's just a cut and dried case that this was a government operation from beginning to end, including the hiring of the terrorists. How do you think they had all those terrorist names in their computers the day after it happened? Including every place they went, every nightclub that they'd been to. And these are jihadists going to nightclubs and frequenting women? No, these were CIA employees. And of course, at least four of those hijackers are still alive today. Four, so they didn't die in 9/11. How did that happen? Well, I'll tell you how it happened. You know about the 28 missing pages? Or the 28 top secret pages the CIA does not want to release what it's about? It's a little bit of disinformation involved there. The 28 pages are about Saudi Arabia paying for the San Diego jihadists who were part of this clique that supposedly came then and flew in and took down these airliners. They were kept up, and Saudi Arabia was paying for their apartments and paying for their food and other things. And the CIA wants that classified. Well, one congressman, Jones, saw the classified documents and said, hey, he was, of course, could only see it if he were sworn to secrecy, he wouldn't reveal. So now he's complaining. He's saying, this needs to be out. I call upon the CIA to release. There's a foreign ally of ours that was involved in 9/11. And that foreign ally is Saudi Arabia. Why does the CIA not want that out? Because you see, the actual real hijackers, which were not the named ones, and that's why the CIA and the government does not allow you to see the videotapes of the hijackers getting on the airplane. You've never seen that, right? No one has ever seen it. It's been locked up tight in a dump. Because you would find out that it wasn't the ones that they named. The ones that actually went out and hijacked the airplanes were trained in Saudi Arabia on real airliners. And I'll tell you, as a very high-tech military pilot, you can't even come close to knowing where the switches are in an airliner, let alone how to fly that thing. You don't even know how to turn off the autopilot or take control of the airplane. There's just no way. And these people who had lessons in Cessnas and failed, by the way, none of them passed their lessons in Cessnas. Could not possibly. And, you know, what terrorist, you know, drives a van to the New York airport and parks it with videotapes and audio tapes and Korans and other types of things, just mapping out the plan? No, real terrorists take taxis. And they use cash to buy a ticket. They don't use credit cards that can be traced. This thing was mapped on just so that you could make a poster boy out of terrorism. And look at the TSA and what they did to us. You know how you have to have all your little liquids in these plastic bags and things because of the so-called liquid bomb? And you know, that was phony. You heard about the crotch bomber and the shoe bomber, which makes us take off our shoes and go through this, you know, embarrassing x-ray machines. Let me tell you that those were not real terrorists. Real terrorists would know that you can't light plastic explosives with a match. No, I'm not kidding you. It's simple. Every Marine Corps grunt in Vietnam knows that. What did you cook your chow with? You had all these little pieces of plastic explosive that you take off the mortar rounds. You determine the trajectory of the mortar, how far it goes by how many tabs of C4 you take off the round. And you accumulate these things, and when you want to heat your chow, you put the little tab of C4 down, and you light it with a match, and you heat your chow. They all know that you can't set off C4 with a match. These weren't terrorists. These were mind-controlled dupes that were put aboard, not intended to take down another airliner, but it's simply to justify the TSA in running roughshod over our privacy and our rights. How many of you heard, of course, that the NSA is only collecting metadata? But you see, you can't collect the metadata without collecting the content, because it's all one digital stream. Now, you can collect everything and then sort out and take the metadata, but you can't just take the metadata. It's all part of one big stream. They're lying to you. And the so-called FISA court, which protects your rights, is just a rubber stamp of the NSA. And they don't even start to give. They give them about 1,500 warrants a year in the FISA court. And it's just a sham. And they just rubber stamp every one of the warrants. And occasionally they'll just say, oh, no, we don't think that's enough evidence. But, you know, where do you get the evidence to justify the warrant? From NSA spying. The courts never ask them, where did you get that evidence that you're bringing forward? It comes from spying. You can't present illegal evidence to justify a warrant. And then there's ISIS, the latest terror threat. What happened to Al-Qaeda? Who hears about Al-Qaeda anymore? What happened? Did it just die and disappear? Yeah, all of a sudden everything is ISIS. Well, ISIS was a creation of the CIA and MI6 about a year and a half ago. They decided, hey, everyone's getting tired of Al-Qaeda. By the way, Al-Qaeda at the top was a CIA operation run by bin Laden. Now, bin Laden was not an enemy of the people, and bin Laden did not die in Abbottabad, Pakistan. Obama, or Osama bin Laden died in 2002 of liver failure, or kidney failure. Nobody lasts that long on dialysis. Nobody to last to that. But anyway, there are several leaders who knew when Osama bin Laden died in 2002. Who did they kill in Abbottabad? I believe they killed one of the one or two lookalikes that the CIA had to make the videos that you saw about Osama bin Laden taking credit for 9/11. That was a lookalike. And that's who they killed at Abbottabad. And you know, you heard about the SEAL Team 6 and all the people who are claiming credit. There's two now who said, I shot Osama. No, they didn't. Because the entire SEAL Team 6 died at Abbottabad in the stealth helicopter that crashed. And the witnesses, which American newspapers never published, but the witnesses in Abbottabad who watched the whole raid that night from their elevated terraces surrounding this house, say there were two helicopters. One of them came down and landed, and they went through and did the raid, and they came on and put the people into the helicopter. It took off, faltered, crashed down, and everybody died. Everyone died. There were no survivors from the raid on Abbottabad, and it wasn't a bomb in Laden. The Navy personnel on the supposed ship where they landed and disposed of his remains never landed. No remains. They just concocted the story of full error. And then you saw the CH-47 in Afghanistan that supposedly crashed the next month with SEAL Team 6 aboard. Remember that one? Well, that's a very cool way to finally tell the parents of these SEALs why your people died. They didn't die in Abbottabad. They died in the CH-47. But nobody in the media ever asked, what were SEAL teams who have their own dedicated helicopters doing on an Army Reserve CH-47 in Afghanistan? And there's no manifest. You know what a manifest is? It's the list of everybody who flies. Claim there wasn't a manifest. Listen, as a military pilot, there you never take off without a manifest. The military has to know who's aboard that. And suddenly they claim nobody knew who was aboard except that we knew that SEAL Team 6 was aboard. And so if they were aboard, how come these two people are saying, I shot Osama bin Laden, I'm supposed to die? And the stories, you'll never see the media talk about these contradictions, will you? They just never mention it. And so you come up with this rosy-eyed, simplistic view of how the world operates. Let me tell you why ISIS was created. First of all, people were getting tired of Al-Qaeda. Everybody was claiming to be Al-Qaeda, so what difference does it make? And we've never had any normal terrorist attack in the United States since 9/11. Don't you find that strange? Wide open Mexican border, and nobody from Al-Qaeda walks across and blows himself up in a mall, or detonates a railroad track, or an electrical pylon. Don't you find that strange? The FBI warns about terrorism coming away. It never happens. They've been warning about ISIS coming across the border. Well, what's stopping them? There's nothing to stop ISIS from coming through. If the Mexicans come across 15,000 a day, why not ISIS? And if they're already here, why aren't they doing anything? I'll tell you why the government is not going to allow ISIS, which they control, to do any normal terrorist acts in America. You start having a wave of bombings in malls in New Mexico and Arizona, you're going to find the American people say, close that border. And they don't want it closed because it's get in the way of the illegal alien agenda. And what is that agenda? There's a lot of nuances to it, but most importantly, it is to water down American political constitutional values and voting so that eventually you're overwhelmed. I get irritated when I hear conservatives say so often, we let this thing happen. We voted for these people. We're responsible. We're not responsible. I'll bet you haven't had anyone that you voted for win an election probably in the past 20 years. The last time I voted for a Republican was Ronald Reagan. And you know, Ronald Reagan was, in my opinion, a sincere conservative. He wrote his own speeches. So it wasn't the speechwriters. You can't fake that. But he was a compromised individual. And he could be played. I was chairman of the Conservative National Committee in Washington, D.C. during the Reagan administration, and my specific purpose in being back there was to help stop the compromises that Ronald Reagan was making. Now, Ronald Reagan didn't want to do that, but he had explained to him numerous times why you must do this. And it started out, you know, he was, every president since Dwight D. Eisenhower, actually it goes back to, you know, Woodrow Wilson was the first one, put in directly by manipulation of the conspiracy and the establishment. Woodrow Wilson, they had dirt on because of his having an affair at Princeton, and they always have to have dirt on someone to control them in the White House. A couple of presidents like Coolidge and Hoover passed by without being directly controlled by the establishment. Then you got FDR, someone who claimed to be a conservative and lied his way into the office, and then became the hardcore leftist, and he was married to Eleanor, of course, who was an outright Marxist. But Dwight D. Eisenhower was a very conflicted person, too. And I know a lot of you older people think a lot of Dwight D. Eisenhower, but he was really highly compromised and very much controlled. His handler was his brother, Milton Eisenhower, who was a globalist. And Dwight D. Eisenhower had already compromised many times during World War II. He was responsible for Operation Keelhaul, enforcing the edict that Stalin demanded that everybody from Eastern Europe, whether they'd been under communism or been under, everybody had to be shipped back to him for the gulags or for the labor camps. And Eisenhower was the one who did that. Eisenhower was the one who gave the orders to shoot anybody who didn't want to go back. And many were killed. The British were also under Churchill. They betrayed whole divisions of white Russian troops, the ones that had escaped when they were fighting the Bolsheviks, and they had escaped out of the Soviet Union into Romania and Bulgaria, and when the Nazis started to fight Stalin, they joined the Nazis, and they fought against Stalin. Then at the end of the war, on the victorious side, they were rounded up by the British officers and promised that they were going to a meeting of rest and relaxation. They were disarmed, they were taken in trucks and driven into a Soviet camp and turned over to the Soviet Union. People who had never lived in Russia were betrayed by Churchill. Churchill bombed civilian cities even though it didn't need to be bombed. You talk about war crimes. Churchill and the West were responsible for war crimes that far exceeded the 6 million of the Jews that were destroyed by Hitler. It wasn't actually 6 million, but it was significant. And but there's so many things that you don't know about history because you are taught a sanitized form of history in the public schools, and that's why public schooling is so dangerous to the health of this nation, because it is government schooling. It is controlled schooling. It's very, very important for you to realize that you've got to break loose. And you know, you're busy and you say, if I have to teach my children or I don't have the money to put them in private schooling, then you wonder how come your kids come home with all of these bad attitudes. You know, you can make up for the education lack that they get, but you can't get rid of the bad attitudes when they swim in that all day long and they come back with snide attitudes, talking back, and sexual innuendos that they pick up. You try eliminating that from a child's mind. It's very, very difficult, if not impossible, to do. We homeschool all of our 6 children, and the most common question that we got is, well, how do your children deal with the social problem of not being able to interact with the rest of the world? Being, you know, iconoclastic, you know, just tucked away in this little mold that you have in your family. And I would respond to them, you know, it's the social benefits that's specifically why we didn't put our kids in public schools. There is no social benefit. None whatsoever. It's only social damage that happens in the public schools. If your children come out of the public schools undamaged, it's in spite of the socialization that they were subjected to, not because of it. And I said, besides, have you ever talked to any of my children? They can talk to you as an adult. They don't look down and say, hello. They look you straight in the eye. They're capable because they're used to talking to a wide range of ages. You get to talk to a 9th grader, and you can't talk to anybody who's 6 months older. He's not my peer group. Can't talk to him. My kids could talk to anybody. And that's what happens when you treat them and expect them to interact on an adult basis in education. And we were able to accomplish homeschooling in about, and I shouldn't say we, it's mostly my dear wife back here who did most of it, but in about 3 hours a day. How many hours do your kids spend in public schools? Mostly wasting their time. Being led by the lowest common denominator. Don't try to improve the public schools. Don't join the PTA. Don't run for the school board. Don't try to get better textbooks. Let it die its death as soon as possible. The worse it gets, the better off. The sooner it will drive people out. If nothing else, to save your children from the vaccines, the horrors of vaccines. But you're required to vaccinate your children to put them in public schools. Don't do it. It's extremely damaging. And any child that survives it, it's because his immune system was happened to be strong enough to kill it. That's why the worst thing you can do is give vaccines to children, to babies. And that's why you don't want to go into the hospitals anymore, because you can have your children taken away from you if you refuse to have the shots and the vaccines that the nurses want to give them. And literally, when they take that baby away to the nursery and you don't get it back, and there's a Department of Family Services saying, you know, you've got to meet these and these requirements, just don't do it. You don't have to, because there's so many home birth, and even, you know, like in this community, you've got a better birth area, which is certified midwives, not pertaining to a medical doctor, because then they have to follow medical protocol. Direct entry midwives, and this is, my wife is one of those. She's retired now, but you know, there's no excuse to do this in a hospital and subject yourself to the horror stories that happen when you get your children taken away and you have to succumb to this. While we're talking about vaccines, let's talk a little bit about Ebola. Now, there's a lot of rumors about Ebola, you know, starting from a weapons laboratory, and I think they are correct. The U.S. has been collecting Ebola and cultivating Ebola samples for over 9 years now. They have a patent on a certain strain of Ebola, and they're looking for other patents. It is suspected that, in fact, because we have a weapons lab in Africa, that they released the Ebola into the African population. And why did they do that? It isn't just because they want to infect a lot of people. It isn't because they want to cause a plague. Because this particular strain of Ebola is too difficult to transmit. It has to be transmitted by contact or by droplets coming out of the mouth and sneezing or other ways to get in contact with people. It's not transmitted normally just through regular breathing. And so that doesn't make for a good plague. But in biological warfare, what they do is they know that if you start a disease somewhere and then you take blood samples from it, as it interacts with the immune system, it creates different mutant forms of the virus. And so they're collecting other mutant forms. They've collected thousands of samples from Ebola patients, and they're going to get what could be a weaponized version of Ebola. Now, one of the interesting things about when it becomes weaponized, that it becomes more easily transmittable. And that's the problem with biological warfare. Two problems, really. Is one, it affects everybody. And two, it doesn't spread very easily. I mean, the more it spreads, the more it dilutes. And the more diluted it gets, the more capable your immune system is of stopping or fighting against the thing. So, and that's what happens when you weaponize it, and it becomes transmittable through the air rather easily. It becomes less lethal as well. That's one of the reasons why Ebola is pretty lethal, is because it's direct contact. It's a much more concentrated form of the virus, and it's very lethal. But when they weaponize it, it isn't quite as lethal, but it spreads more rapidly. So I think what happened in Ebola, and by the way, it is true that the media kind of just let Ebola go away, and Ebola is going away. It is not now replicating itself in leaps and bounds. It's basically staying within the same population, and eventually it's going to be overcome. But the next round that ever surfaces is probably going to be a more lethal, not lethal form, but more easily spread. What they try to do with these new forms, if you're going to do a bioweapon, you have to try to develop a vaccine for the elite so that they are protected. You don't want to throw a plague around and then have the elite's children get it. So they want a vaccine. And remember, how are they confident that vaccines are any better than what you get sick with? You know, people have a lot of terrible reactions to vaccines. it is that they're capable of doing purified vaccines, so they don't have the mercury and all the junk in it. But you can't do that in mass doses. It's very expensive to do very sterile vaccines, but they can do that in small quantities for the elite. But they have to have a vaccine for this before they release something as a plague. And there isn't any vaccine for Ebola, but they're trying. And that's one of the reasons why they patent a certain strain, because that's the one they're going to try to work on a vaccine. Well, this takes years to do. So the bottom line I'm telling you is that Ebola is not going to be the plagues that have been. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about the hype. But remember this. When it does come, the government will have a vaccine for themselves, which will be purified, and they'll have a mass vaccine for you, and do not take it, because it is not safe. We know that the government has even experimented with vaccines, putting such things, like the women in the Philippines, they put an abortificant into a tetanus shot to test if they could do birth control on people. And many, many women aborted their babies in the Philippines. It was a major scandal because some honest doctors found out that this was this abortificant in this vaccine. And the UN was in charge of distributing this. Don't trust the UN. Don't trust the Red Cross. I could go on and on about these so-called charitable organizations where the leaders have salaries close to $1 million a year. And including the Boy Scouts of America. But the Red Cross is one of the most notorious. As Marines, we have a real black mark for the Red Cross ever since they tried to charge us for donuts and coffees in Korea. Donated by the American people, and they were trying to charge us. So the Marines don't like the Red Cross. Let me talk a little bit about Ferguson. I felt that the grand jury was manipulated. Normally a grand jury, as was the New York grand jury relative to the Garner strangling case, the prosecutor puts evidence in there, to make someone, guilty. Generally, he prevents only the guilty evidence, and the grand jury is supposed to, is that enough guilty evidence to do it? I'm not in favor of the grand jury process, by the way. It's secret. Like most juries, you have the ability to take people off the jury, like they did Hoppe Heidelberg in Oklahoma City. He was on the grand jury, and he saw that the government was refusing to give them the evidence that they needed to make a decision about whether or not there were other accomplices to McVeigh, and they removed him from the grand jury. So see, it's a secret closed shop. You start to complain to the prosecutor, you're going to be off that jury. They only want compliant people, just like regular jury service. That's why you have these preemptive motions by the attorneys to be able to take people off of the jury. They only want the dumbed-down people that they can manipulate and who will take the orders of the judge. If you want to get off jury service, all you have to do is say, I believe that the jury can judge both the law and the fact. That's all you have to say. You are excused. That's all it takes. Judges know, I don't want anybody here who thinks that they can job with them. And I would say, too, and I believe we can judge whether or not the judge's instructions to us apply in this case. That will guarantee you get off the jury. But in Ferguson, it's true that they did put most of the witnesses. I think they scoured the community trying to find witnesses in favor of the policeman. But as best that I can get from the evidence, here's what happened. Officer Wilson has a history of bad-mouthing blacks. And anybody, and this isn't just racist, as Tom was saying tonight, it really isn't just racism, although they do bad-mouth blacks. Blacks have about 80% of the encounters with blacks and Latinos have about 80% of the encounters with police. Now, there's a reason for that, and it's not racism. The media tells you it's because they're just profiling and racism. No, it's because 80% of the problems are involving blacks and Latinos. That's the truth. You can call it a racist statement, but it's an actual fact. And there's nothing wrong with profiling. I mean, you're stupid if you don't use your brain and say, it isn't that you don't want to be fair, okay? But you don't always have time to be fair. Let's suppose that you're interviewing somebody for a job. And you know that you want a certain type of person for this particular, this is a job that really requires a lot of agility, for example. So you're not going to pick overweight, obese people, right? So you're going to profile. Because you don't have time to find out if they are an exception. If this overweight person is so agile and so in shape that he can actually do it. You just don't have time to do that. Everybody has to basically save time. And so even though you'd like to interview in depth, you're basically going to pick these are the people in general that are going to be the most liable. And I'm going to interview them. And there's nothing wrong with that in a free market. And so there's nothing wrong with police profiling. If you're looking for illegal aliens, you're going to look mostly for Muslims or Latinos, people who don't look like normal Americans, because your highest chances of finding that are in that. But Officer Wilson in 2013 was seen on a video telling a black man who was videoing him, he was called to investigate his junkie yard, and the yard was junky. But the black guy wanted a video to make sure that he was going to be treated fairly. It's legal. Nothing wrong with that. Police do not have right to privacy when acting in official capacity. Been ruled by many, many courts. And the first words out of Officer Wilson's mouth is, I'm going to put your black ass in jail if you don't stop filming me. And he did arrest him when he stopped filming, when he did not stop filming. So he not only claimed wrongful law to him, he arrested him wrongfully and sent him to jail. For it, and he was released, of course, because there was no, and there was nothing done to Officer Wilson. But he's on record as saying, I'm going to put your black ass in jail if you don't stop filming. So I perceive, even though there's no witness to this, that when Michael Brown was walking in the street, and when he drove up in his cruiser, he didn't say, would you please walk on the sidewalk so that you're not in the traffic? He said, get your black ass on the sidewalk. Yeah. And Michael Brown punched the guy. Now, Officer Wilson also said that in the struggle that Michael Brown tried to get his weapon from him. And that's a little strange, especially when Officer Wilson says that he, in struggling with him, got his weapon up and fired at Brown, and the gun misfired twice. Now, you can do that in a revolver, when you can keep pulling the trigger and it rotates the cylinder and puts a new round in there and it misfires, you know. Modern day rounds misfiring twice, even once, you know, once in a, you know, 1,000 chance maybe. But he's doing a 40 Smith & Wesson automatic pistol. You've got to rack the slide to get rid of the misfire. He's struggling with Michael Brown. He's going to, wait, I need two hands to rack my slide. Try it again and rack my slide again. I'm just not believing that. Not a single newspaper even asked about the contradiction about a 40 Smith & Wesson automatic pistol having to take two hands to clear a misfire. And he said he did it twice while he was struggling with Brown. I'm just not buying that. So he's making up the story. But in fact, he did get off a round and he shot him in the thumb. And Michael Brown then takes off. What does the officer do? Instead of calling for backup and saying, I'm going to need to watch this guy and he's violent, he's hit me. He was hit. Officer Wilson was attacked by Michael Brown. But he goes after him. Instead of walking behind the cruiser, giving him orders, and then following him at a safe distance, he's unarmed, by the way. He's not going to turn around and shoot him. He starts shooting. And we now have the audio tape of the fires. 11 rounds fired. First of them, sick. Bam, 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 bam. This guy's not a good shot. Doesn't hit him anywhere in the torso. The investigator comes up, refuses to measure the difference, distance of where the cruiser was and where Brown is, because he basically doesn't want to show on the evidence that there's a long distance. This is not close. This is not point blank range. Then there's a pause of about 2 seconds, and then, blam, 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 five more shots. What happened during that time? Well, here's what the best witnesses said. He starts shooting at him. He chases after Brown, starts shooting at him. Brown turns around with his hands up. He sees that he's coming after him. Brown turns around with his hands like this, and he starts this when the five rounds are. All right. Now Brown says, look, this guy's going to kill me. He's only hit in the elbow and the hand and in the side. He's not hit in the torso. And if you were being shot at by a policeman without any cause, your hands are up, what would you do? Brown says, I better charge it. And so witnesses did say he charged it. Well, you got to look at what distance. Did he charge him? No, he charged him after the first six shots because he was going to kill him. And that was his only chance. So he lowers his head to charge, and that's where he takes a bullet in the head, and he's died. He dies. Well, first of all, there is probable cause to indict when an officer curses and incites a person to violence by the way that he treats them. And that's why cameras are very important to have on police. And I don't know what happened to the dash cam. They had dash cams, and apparently it was inoperable, as often happens when the police are involved in a shooting. But there's probable cause for manslaughter when you provoke something and then you chase after someone and kill him who's unarmed when he's fleeing from you. Now that's why I think that the grand jury was a yes man to the prosecutor, clearly wanted Officer Wilson off. But that pales in comparison to the Garner case in New York, when the grand jury failed to indict the officer for giving a chokehold. Now, with a chokehold, this isn't a weapon. You got the man's head in. You could hear his screams. You could hear his gasping. You could hear everything about him. And you keep choking until he dies. That is not just manslaughter. That's literal murder when they're unarmed. And he offered no resistance because there was a person filming it. And believe me, you've got to learn to film things. Every traffic stop, film them. Now, I've had nothing but good responses from traffic policemen that I've met here in this area and in Oregon where I'm from. But there is that odd one that will get real pompous with you and real thuggish and start ordering around, especially if you try to say, you know, I prefer not to answer any questions or I want to reserve my constitutional rights. That's a warning bell for them. Ah, there's a right winger here and we got to treat them rough. And you see plenty of videos on YouTube about encounters with police, and boy, that demeanor changes when you stop cooperating, exercise your legal rights. They just start cursing and demanding, and you've got to have film, because the only time that a court will ever let off the police is when you have filmed evidence. Otherwise, the police are going to lie and the courts are going to believe them. The typical phrase out of a judge is, I'm not going to second guess the police. Who's asking you to second guess? I'm presenting you evidence. You're a judge. You're supposed to judge the evidence. I'm not asking you to guess once or even twice. Read the evidence. The evidence shows he was abusive of that thing. The evidence shows that he's lied. And by the way, here's a videotape proving it. And all of a sudden, you've got the police caught in the line. What happens? The judge says, okay, case dismissed. You're not all longer, you know, liable. But what happens to the officer? Does he get sent to jail? No. He gets reinstated. He may get slapped on the hand a couple of times because he got caught. But officers and judges protect them. And that's why we've got a problem with police brutality. Because no one's calling them to account. All you have to do is throw them in the slammer for giving a chokehold with a 10 to 12, maybe 15-year sentence for manslaughter for that police officer who killed Garner. And that would send shockwaves to the police. I better be more careful. Dozens of them. Did you see the video about the policeman getting out with a kid who's got a toy gun, running around aiming at people like kids are wont to do? And even the 911 gun is probably a toy gun, but making us uncomfortable. The police get out of the car, little tiny kid here, you know, and blam, 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 blam. I mean, just not like, I mean, him, park half a block away, first of all, and call to the kid and say, you know, try to determine it out of safe range. I realize you can't mess around with a kid who's got a gun, but you could at least do some due diligence to find out if he's really deadly or not. With a kid here in Utah, you know, with the sword. Saudi police chasing him for blocks and the things. And then, you know, he's going to go into arms, so we better shoot him dead. Oh, come on, you haven't even come close to determining. You're not at danger with a person, even if it's a real-life samurai sword, unless you get within 10 feet of them, all right? So stay 30 feet away and talk to the guy. Find out what's going on. Show some compassion here. But it is true, the police are taught nowadays to shoot first and ask questions later. They're told so many horror stories about someone who gets close to them and then all of a sudden takes their gun or shoots them or pulls one out that they're just hyper towards shoot and then ask questions later. But it's the court's fault and it's the police chief's fault for these phony investigations. But I want to tell you that police brutality and thuggishness is being encouraged by the courts, because that's how dissidents get taken down someday. You know, there's a lot of rumors about thousands of foreign troops in the country. They're all false. All of them. There may be 40 Russian troops cross-training with American troops. That's globalism, by the way. Letting sure that the Russian troops know the best equipment that we're dealing with so they know how to counter us. We do all these exercises with China. What are we doing exercises with China? So they can eavesdrop on all of our naval exercises? Of course. We're no business doing this. But it's not to take down American people with foreign troops. And I know there's hundreds of people with dreams and visions, which I think are full of. There's a lot of curveballs and deceptions and dreams and visions of that. Foreign troops and other things. But every time I get one of these rumors about foreign troops, I've got subscribers all over the country. I just send them out, check it out. Nope, no troops. Not on the Mexican border, not on the Canadian border, not at Fort Huachuca, not anywhere. They don't need foreign troops. We've got hundreds of thousands of thugs in training in the United States, and they're training them with military surplus gear. Give them automatic weapons, make them all into SWAT teams, and what are SWAT teams told to do? Run around, you know, pointing the weapon. And that's what happened in Ferguson. You had this SWAT team come towards these guys, no weapons, just reporters and things, training a weapon at them, you know, just not called for. But they're training and they're not going to stop that. Notice what Barack Obama said when he talked about giving $75 million towards the wearing of body cameras to all police forces, actually about that. 20% of police is all $75 million will cover. But it says, we will not stop the program of giving free military equipment to the police, because that's really helpful. He was speaking on behalf of the globalist agenda. Militarize the police, get them in armored personnel carriers, tanks, and things, because they act the part when you do that. Look at the Cleveland example. The Justice Department came out and said, we have determined that Cleveland has a history of abuse, and it's been covered up by the police force. The investigations have been a sham. And so what's the matter? Are they going to open the cases and allow the victims who filed suit and were dismissed to have their day in court based upon? No. We're just going to monitor the police department for the next few years. Monitor the police. No consequence. Nobody gets fired. The policemen who were abusive don't get fired. No consequences. Just, we're going to monitor. And you can bet there's not going to be much monitoring. It's just a show-and-tell system. So my basic message today is to you, when I rehearse with you the history of the deceptions, the outright conspiracies to lie to the American people and to do large criminal acts, and if you want a recitation of some of the very detailed ones before the ones that I mentioned, go to Rodney Stitch's book, Defrauding America. It's still available here on Amazon.com. It's got all of them from the 80s, from the CIA, DEA, INS, all these people were taken down by our government because they got cold feet and became whistleblowers. And the stories that they had to tell are just amazing. It's not particularly well written. He repeats himself a little bit. But he got sent to prison as an FAA inspector, by the way, because he found out that United Airlines and the FAA were covering up for each other. He got taken down and put to prison. When he went to prison, he met all these CIA and DEA people and other government officials that were put in prison too. And they made a pact. When I get out, you use your telephone calls that you have once a month, and you come and you give me your evidence, I'll check it out, and I'll publish all this stuff. I'll publish your stories. They've been sent to prison to silence them. So Defrauding America is the stories of the whistleblowers in America that were sent down by our government. It's very easy to do when you do illegal acts. All the government has to do when they want to take you down is call the police on you. He's going to be doing this and this and this at this particular place. And when he comes before the judge and says, but I work for the CIA, the CIA says, no, he doesn't. And then when he has proof, because a lot of these people pulled out of the public, here's my paperwork from the CIA, the judge says, inadmissible. And you're not allowed to ever mention the CIA. You can't mention what your defense is. So my other point is, not only do we have militarization of thuggish police forces, and that's, by the way, one of the major reasons why the government, at great expense, went to do mercenaries in the Afghan and Iraq war. They told you it was cheaper, didn't they, than hiring more soldiers? What, $10,000 or $1,000 a day? That's cheaper? Wasn't cheaper. They were basically going through a process of vetting and selecting thuggish individuals that could then move on to become the people to take down dissidents. And it's an ongoing process that's happening. And I do want to say something about military service here. It's in today's World Affairs Brief, I covered the fact that women are joining the military out of these starry-eyed views that I'm serving my country. And I get this, I walk down the street, or if I have my military cap on, people say, thank you for your service, thank you for your service. Military is not serving your liberties. They may think they are. Actually, only about half of people in the military actually understand or believe the propaganda. About half of soldiers are wanting to get out because they know they're fighting for globalism and they're not happy about it. They know they're being lied to. They know the government doesn't protect them. They know that the military service covers things up. If you're a woman or know women are going into the military with a starry-eyed view that your sexuality is going to be protected, think again. It just revealed the case against the entire gold crew of the USS Wyoming, the first ballistic missile, or the first submarine to which a women crew was assigned. And they put a secret camera in their dressing and shower rooms and filmed them for a year and circulated that for a year, and nobody had blown the whistle. Every commanding officer knew about it. Every other officer and half the enlisted in, nobody blew the whistle until one person who got it sent to another ship blew the whistle on it. And suddenly it's all hush-hush and they're covering up for what's going on. And this is bad. Rapes are epidemic in the military. You just don't put military men who don't have any self-control generally because they're used to being told as long as you don't get caught, anything goes, and they do overseas. Tell you, when my squadron, when I joined it and why I came back from Vietnam, it was the raunchiest squadron that ever existed. I mean, it was so bad that even my friend who was a colonel in the infantry of the Marine Corps couldn't believe it, because these types of things weren't done in those days in the infantry side. But the air wing was different. They were God's gift to women, you know, and proud and arrogant. Combine Marines with fighter pilots and you got a real problem. But in any case, I finally had to leave the squadron because I wasn't going along with it and had a very bad set team for about 2 or 3 months with the commanding officer. He couldn't sleep at night because he finally had an officer who didn't approve of what he was doing. But anyway, that was before the Tailhook Convention scandal broke. And the Tailhook Convention scandal, this was the fighter pilot, Navy fighter pilot, Las Vegas convention once a year in which a lot of raucous and raunchy things were going on and condoned by high military officers. And finally it got brought to the attention of Congress and they shut them down. A lot of people lost their rank and they just put it underground. But also a bad thing about the military is you have to take vaccines and you get the worst of the vaccines in the military. They're the vaccines that they won't give to the public. They're going to experiment on some and they experiment on the troops. So forget about supporting the troops. You don't support the troops by sending them into the military. Encourage people not to go in. And I'll tell you one other reason. The whole purpose of what we're doing in ISIS and the war on terror is really a diversion so that you won't notice that the two greatest enemies, Russia and China, are getting very aggressive and they're getting in the midst of active preparation to nuke this country. Not cities, but the military. And that's one of the reasons why I'm against anybody going into the military service. If you're in the military service when this nuclear attack comes upon America, you're going to die if you're in the military. Because every military base is going to get hit. And the reason is because our government is setting us up to take a nuclear first strike. This is a very serious accusation which I make. I don't make it lightly as a former military officer, but I have the evidence. First of all, you have to go back historically, and you have to see, why has the United States, why did they bring or help bring Russia to power and communists to power? Why did they fight against the white Russian army? Why did they cut off aid to the white Russian army so that the Bolsheviks could win? You realize that the government, or actually the globalist under Jacob Schiff, gave $20 million to Trotsky, a communist, to to send him back to start the revolution. And the British government were handing out 100-ruble bills to the police officers so they wouldn't fire upon the Bolsheviks. And, of course, history tells you they just fled. You know, they just didn't want to tangle with these nice Bolsheviks. They were paid off by British agents. And then in World War II, under Lend-Lease, we gave the Russians the rest of the nuclear plans to nuclear weapons that they couldn't steal in the Manhattan Project. That was found out by Major Racy Jordan at the Montana Air Base, which was shipping them to Russia. You saw these big black trunks being shipped by the Russians marked diplomatic baggage. He got suspicious, confiscated them, opened them up, and found all these nuclear weapons plans. And before he was done inventorying this thing, he gets a call from the White House. Harry Hopkins. Now, Harry Hopkins was a communist spy in the White House, but he really wasn't a communist spy. Like Alger Hiss, he was a globalist who joined the Communist Party to facilitate communists coming in, to facilitate so that communists would get the blame and not the globalists. But the globalists protected the communists. He calls up Major Jordan and says, give that stuff back to the Russians and don't ever mention it again. Jordan did put it in his diaries, and that's how we know about it today. Thank goodness that certain people in the military don't follow orders when they're illegal. If you'll be told that in the military, you have to follow all orders. They theoretically believe there are such things as illegal orders, but they won't be able to tell you what they are. And believe me, if you disagree, they'll tell you it's a legal order. And there are, you really aren't free. You are slaves when you're in the military. You can't even get out. Even when your enlistment is up. We found that out in Iraq. They violated people's enlistment contract. Listen those up, you're still going to serve. You can't leave. You are slaves. But don't be a slave. But I'm talking about what they're planning to do in the long term. We gave Russia the first enriched uranium to explode their first nuclear weapon a year after Hiroshima. That's the reason why the Russians are up with us today. Under Nixon administration and Henry Kissinger, we gave the Russians the miniature ball bearing technology to be able to MIRV their missiles. That's multiple independent reentry vehicles. MIRV, multiple warheads. You gotta have super fine miniature ball bearings to run the gyroscopes so that they can be accurate. We gave it to them. Under Henry Kissinger, a globalist, and stupid Henry Nixon, a Republican, or Richard Nixon, a Republican. Richard Nixon spent all of his days trying to bootlick and gain the favor of the establishment. And they never forgave him for prosecuting Alger Hiss. Alger Hiss was another globalist who joined the Communist Party like Harry Hopkins. And so they ended up betraying Nixon with the Watergate scandal. And they just basically took him down. It's very interesting. It's very sad. Well, Richard Nixon, the rest of his days, ran around doing everything the globalists wanted, promoting every globalist cause until he finally died. Very sad. Somebody who wanted so badly to be accepted by the establishment. There's too many people among us today in Utah that desperately want to be accepted by the establishment. Many of our leaders, Governor Herbert is one of them, used to be conservative. I was with Gail Ruzicka the other day, and she's a great patriot. And Governor Herbert calls her in about, you know, once every few months. Basically, you know, what can I do to make the conservatives believe I'm really one of them? Do what is right, she says. Oh, I can't do that, you know. Same thing with Orrin Hatch. When Orrin Hatch used to come to town, he used to go see Tom Daschle, a strong conservative, and said, Tom, what can I do to convince the conservatives, you know, that I'm really one of them? Well, start acting like it, you know. But I'm off going back to my topic. What is very serious, and what you don't understand, is that this isn't just about politics. We're way beyond that. If you understand even half of what I know about the conspiracy of black operations and illegal operations, you realize it's not a matter of if the secret combinations are going to take over this government. It's already happened years ago. It's done for. You're not going to get your liberty back. So stop praying in church and thanking God for living in this free country. You're not living in a free country anymore. They only allow you to think that. They only allow you to think that because it keeps you passive. In fact, Mormons are some of the most naive. as long as they have the freedom to worship, and that's the last thing they'll take from you, as long as they have the freedom to worship, you're free. You're losing freedoms every year, every new regulation. Look what Obamacare has done to your freedoms and your liberty. To pay for a tax, for a service that you don't want. And believe me, you don't want the drug-infested services of the medical establishment. I'm glad that it's getting bad. I hope you start getting away from insurance. Insurance only pays for junk. It only pays for bad medicine. It doesn't pay for good medicine. So forget about it. Pay the penalty. Get out of the medical system. Get out of the insurance. And get healthy. Start exercising. Don't think that you can play Russian roulette with bad nutrition and lack of exercise and expect to get away with not being in the arms of the establishment. I'm 68 years old. I still run 3 miles several times a week. And I'm healthy. I stay that way. I eat right. And you should too. If you listen to your conscience, you feel nervous about the Dunkin' Donuts and about the Kool-Aid and the Jell-O and the other things. You'll feel nervous about participating in most dinners that you have at LDS chapels. I mean, I hate to say this, but, you know, we got the word of wisdom. I'm a faithful LDS, but if anybody knows nothing about New Jersey, it's mostly the mainstream Mormons, you know. But to our credit, the majority of the health food companies in the world are here in Utah County. So a lot of you are getting it right. And as I tell a lot of people, go to the Weston Price Foundation website. That's where you find the best information about nutrition. They have meetup groups and other things. Get active in that. Weston, W-E-S-T-I-N, Weston Price Foundation. They've got the cutting edge knowledge about what real good nutrition is. And while we're on that subject, remember, don't eat GMO food. This stuff is poison, and there's a tremendous conspiracy of power trying to keep you from knowing what is in your food. The Monsanto, one of the great evil corporations of this world, puts millions of dollars out and to defeat any referendum to try to put labeling. And when they've won the referendum in Maui, they take them to court and let the judges take away your liberty. And that's what happens more and more as our judges are overruling the rights of the people. But let's go back to the real threats, though, because this is important to realize. We must not, as conservatives, get diverted by getting obsessed with Obama as the solution to our problems, getting rid of Obama. You know, as much as I like some of the things that Dinesh D'Souza puts out, he puts out some big flashy movies and documentaries about the evils of Barack Obama, like 2016 in America. But he's part of the problem because he doesn't believe or recognize the conspiracy that we're dealing with. I'm going to tell you that I don't believe, it's my political opinion, that you will not see Hillary Clinton be the next president in 2016. I think they're going to give you a controlled Republican. Because you all go to sleep when you've got a George W. Bush in the White House. Maybe you won't, but at least our mainstream leaders in Utah went to sleep. Remember how Mitt Romney would bring George W. Bush out here and invite all the big and powerful, and he'd wax eloquent about his testimony of Jesus Christ, and they'd come back to us and tell what a wonderful Christian he is. I tell you, you know, it's really sad that members of the church that are supposed to have the gift of the Holy Ghost can't perceive wolves in sheep's clothing. George Bush would have a Friday prayer breakfast for all the big top ministers who bought into the Republican agenda, like Jerry Falwell and others. And then after he'd borne witness about Jesus Christ and broke bread with them and worshiped with them and prayed with them, after they'd all left, he'd slap his knee and they'd joke around and use the four-letter word talking about how they were all fooled, what a bunch of idiots they were to come here, and curse them. That's George W. Bush. He did the same thing to Mitt Romney's group out of the swanky cabin, and they all bought it. Where is our perception to be able to see this great evil? It's very difficult, I will say. This is a grand deception we're dealing with. I mean, it's very difficult to get through the kind of stuff that we're dealing with, because you have government agents feeding the internet with dozens of bogus conspiracy theories. About almost a third of what you read on the internet is done by government agents posing as conservatives in websites, saying radical and stupid things about, for example, in the Sandy Hook, that there were no children that were killed, that they're all actors. You've all heard that one, haven't you? You've all seen that? It's not true. What it was true is that Adam Lanza was a puppet. He was a mind controller, and there was another shooter with him to make sure, and they always do this when they go shoot children. They have to hypnotize them, they have to mind control them, because even criminals don't shoot children. So to get somebody to shoot children, you've got to mind control him, and you've got to have a handler in there too, to finish him off if he doesn't go through his programming to commit suicide. And there is one child who got on the news and said, yeah, there was another guy in handcuffs on the ground. Now they don't put dead people in handcuffs on the ground. He was a live one, and he saw the other guy. So there was a cover-up. It was a government operation to be able to denigrate, you know, the gun mentality. He didn't even use an assault weapon, as they claimed. They falsified that. They got to the coroner. You can't shoot little kids with an M16 and have that bullet sit in the body. It goes right through. Coroner was lying when he said the bullets were all lodged in the body. I've shot M16. I'm a military trained person. It's a very fast round. He was using a handgun. The rifle was in the trunk. And people saw that. And all kinds of things. But there's a lot of bogus stuff out there, and what their intent is in putting the bogus portions, like the 9/11 conspiracy, that it was vaporized by a beam, you know, and other types of things, they just want to get you discredited. There's enough really good evidence that there were explosions of the explosives laden throughout that. And of course, the terrorists couldn't have put explosives in the World Trade Center. You don't need to go to the bazaar. Real good conspiracies, but that's why you've got to use real good judgment. It's what I try to do in my weekly World Affairs Brief. I spend as much time debunking the junk as I do telling you what the mainstream is missing. And by the way, if you're interested in subscribing, it's a pretty modest fee. You can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com and get a free sample issue of this and of this newsletter. But the war on terror had one basic globalist reason, and the war on terror was really to divert you so that you wouldn't notice the two big enemies, Russia and China, that are being built up to come against us. But secondly, also to create hatred around the world for the United States. You see, Russia and China need an excuse to take down the United States. Our global leaders want the United States taken down. I'll explain that in a second. But you enhance the ability of Russia and China to do that if you make yourself the bully of the world. You go rampaging through the world, creating enemies. Look at Serbia. Remember when we saved Kosovo? You know, I can almost take every single foreign affair and show you how the official version is just garbage. Kosovo rose up against the Serbians because the Serbians were persecuted the Kosovo. Kosovarians, right? Wrong. It was CIA-trained Kosovarians in Albania that invaded Kosovo and at gunpoint told all the Kosovarian leaders to leave at gunpoint, and then they said they were refugees fleeing the Serbs. The Kosovarians that were shot by the Serbs, these were other people shot and dressed up in Kosovarian uniforms. So the whole massacre that precipitated. And then when the U.S. invaded Serbia or did air attacks on Serbia, they hit civilian targets. They didn't hit military targets. They hit television stations, radios, dams, bridges. They hit civilian targets. Why? So that the Serbs would hate the Americans. And there's proof of that it worked. Remember in the phony fall of the Soviet Union, how all of a sudden Americans were popular? They could go visit Moscow and everybody thought it was wonderful. Mormon missionaries went in and everybody wanted to hear about the gospel. And then the war in Serbia happened. And all of a sudden the Russians hated Americans because of what we did to the Serbs. They're Serb, they're Slavs, and the Slavs stick together. We sabotaged our own image. We hired Harvard University to teach the Russians how to do free market reforms in the post-Soviet state. And they embezzled $75 million out of that money that was given. Why teach, why hire Harvard University to do that? It's because you're trying to sabotage this. I mean, if I could see that the phony fall of the Soviet Union was phony, so could the media, but they never asked any questions. Neither would our government. They played right along. And they even gave Ronald Reagan credit so that you conservatives would all believe it. Because Ronald Reagan's our hero now. He made the Soviet Union fall down. He was as surprised as anybody. It was a shock. But the whole purpose of the war on terror is really to create the image of the U.S. as the bully of the world. And that's why we're still there. Now, the specific reason why we created ISIS was twofold. One, Al-Qaeda was wearing off. They needed a new enemy. Al-Qaeda was a U.S. enemy. Remember 9/11? All the world applauded, yes, you go after the terrorists. But it wasn't an international war on terror, really, yet, until ISIS comes along. Now, all of a sudden, you start beheading British, French, and Americans. And they'll pick any number of countries just to make sure everybody gets in this battle. And then they bring together, we're going to have fighters from the Arab countries join in, and they're doing a few picayune type. It's 90% is American fighters doing the thing. They're just doing it to get people used to what? Working together as a global military, because that's what they're preparing you to accept. And here's how it's going to come down. At some point in the future, and I think that North Korea will be the trigger, there has to be some reason why the U.S. treats North Korea, the worst regime in the world, differently than Iran. North Korea has nuclear weapons, tested them, has the missiles to deliver them, and we say nothing. No military options on the table, no regime change required. Sanctions are put on and then easily taken off. And when they violate their sanctions, we still go ahead and give them the millions of gallons of oil that we promised and the other aid and the food aid. Is that how we treat Iran? Iran doesn't even have a nuclear weapon yet, hasn't tested one, doesn't have a missile that can reach any further than Israel. And yet, it is the pariah of the world. We are going to go to war, there's got to be complete regime change, everything. What the difference? It's because the globalists know that North Korea is going to be the trigger event for World War III, and they don't want to take it out. You see, Russia and China aren't going to just nuke the United States military. They're going to have North Korea start a war, let the U.S. respond, and then they'll have an excuse, and I think this is how it'll play out. Look at the imbalance in North Korea. 2 million North Koreans versus 50,000 South Korean troops, 20 miles apart. 2 million troops versus 50,000. 20,000 artillery tubes aimed at Seoul. They can level the city in 2 days. How do you stop that once you start an invasion? They got 4,000 tanks versus about 500. How do you stop that? Tactical nuclear weapons? I think that's what they're betting on. You see, the U.S. is allowed to be so lopsided without taking it down that it's going to take tactical nukes to stop that. And then China can say, you started it. First use, U.S. And then they launch and take down the military. They aren't going to target cities. You know, this whole thing about MAD, mutually assured destruction, is propaganda. It has never been this military strategic policy of Russia, China, the United States, Germany, anybody, to just nuke cities when they can nuke the military first and blackmail you into submission. And that's what they intend to do. Russia and China don't want to destroy the engine of ingenuity that keeps them alive. They use European technology. They use American technology. They're stealing it all the time. Of course, we give it to Israel, and Israel sells it to China with our permission. But, you see, the real problem is that we are setting ourselves up to absorb a nuclear first strike. Now, you say, what about all our anti-missile defenses? Well, have you ever wondered why the United States developed an anti-missile that has no warhead on it? It has a kinetic kill vehicle, a big piece of tungsten that has to make direct contact with a 10,000 mile per hour incoming warhead in order to destroy it. You know what our success rate is under controlled tests? 50%. And how many of these interceptions do we have? Oh, we have about 30. How many warheads does Russia have? 3,000 we know of. More likely about 9,000. It's a pittance. ABMs? Add to that the Aegis? You know, we have maybe 100. What's it going to do? It's nothing. But there's even one more thing that proves to me that we're going to absorb a nuclear first strike. And that's PDD-60. Many of you have heard me speak of this before. Presidential Decision-Making 60, 1997, President Bill Clinton, he didn't have anything to do with it, written for him, he signed it. It instructs the military not to rely on launch on warning, but to prepare to absorb a nuclear first strike and retaliate afterwards. Now, you non-military people may not know what that means, but I'm going to explain it to you. What is launch on warning? It's a very good military doctrine. It means that when our satellites perceive Russian and military missiles launching, we launch our missiles. Remember, these are ballistic missiles. So their missiles are already on the way, aimed at what? Our silos. 450 of them. And going down. And by the time those missiles reach our silos, they're empty. Because all of our missiles are launched. Okay, so what does it mean? It means the one who launches second is the one who wins a first strike. When you have early warning detection. So when our government instructs our military not to rely on launch on warning, but prepare to absorb a nuclear first strike, General Butch Neal exclaimed, "With what?" He was the assistant commandant of the Marine Corps at the time. He heard of that order. He was incensed. Well, we've got a missile submarines. We've got a dozen of those, right, with ballistic missiles. That can protect us, right? No. In 1997, Bill Clinton, at the orders of his globalist handlers, agreed voluntarily, unilaterally to the Russians, we will keep 50% of our nuclear missile submarines imported in one time just to make sure you can target them more easily. Those are the words he said, as a gesture of goodwill to show you that we're no threat to you. Can you see the point our government's laying down backwards and disarming? Do you realize that Russia has violated every single arms treaty they've signed with the United States, and we fulfilled every single one, even after they rejected? We don't even have a disarmament treaty with China. That's like three people in a circle with guns aimed at each other. Well, let you and I have a disarmament treaty, and we disarm. And there's a third one there with arms. You don't have a treaty with them. Can you see how stupid it is to have a disarmament treaty with one when you got another nuclear power out there? We shouldn't be disarming at all. We just took all of the triple warheads off of our 450 remaining missile Minuteman III's and turned them into Minuteman I missiles. And you never heard about it, did you? Unless you read the World Affairs Brief. We just took off 1,200 missiles and put them down, warheads, to put them down to 450. And you know that our government is shooting off one missile a month nearly, so we keep going from, we used to have 500, now we got 450, and we're going for 400. This is not suicide. This is trying to induce the Russians and Chinese to attack. Why would our government want them to attack us? Because one, they know that they're only going to attack the military first and try to blackmail us into submission. Number two, they want our military destroyed as well. Why? Because it's the final straw that you can talk people into a global new world order. Nobody wants it. Look at the backlash in Europe against the EU. The Independent Party in Britain has 25% support now from the pittance. Jean-Marie Le Pen's party in France is the strongest party in the French government now. It's the same in Austria. There's a major wave against globalism. And they have known that's going to come. They know that people won't take it. But with war, you won't be able to say no. If you get nuked in the United States, think of it this way. The whole world depends on the U.S. to defend them. And if the U.S. forces are nuked all over the world, the whole world's going to say, whoa, we're defenseless. But our leaders will come out of their bunkers and say, no, we're not defenseless. Because they have secret weapon systems that they've been developing. That they did not use to defend us against them, but they will bring out afterwards to keep any further nukes from falling while they regroup under this glorious militarized global government. You'll live to see this day that I'm predicting. Bruce R. McConkie was not wrong when he said nuclear war surely must come. It will come someday. How many of you are prepared for it? Do you know what you have to do to prepare? Is just a year's supply of food enough? How many of you actually, now I'm going to ask you to raise your hand, just because I don't want you to reveal what you have, but think in your own mind, how many of you really have a full year's supply of food? And is that enough? If there's radiation coming from San Diego and Los Angeles and things, what good is your food storage if you're starting to die from radiation signals? You have to have protection. And it's not part of the recommended food storage. This is left for you to think for yourself. And that's why you're here tonight, to get instructed on what's coming up. But what I fear about our conservative movement is we're so concerned about winning back our liberties, which are already gone, and they're not coming back, that we're going to be fighting the Obamas and the George Bushes and the people that are right up to the day the nukes come, and you will not be prepared. Here's why it's important to be prepared. I believe that there's a silver lining in this attack that comes. You all know how alone you feel in society. Even among supposedly the most conservative state in the Union, most of you people feel like pariahs. You can't talk to your home teacher. You can't even talk in priesthood meeting about the things you know. Right? I don't talk at all in church. But what's going to change is this. It's suddenly... And don't think for a minute the people won't believe your government. They will believe your leaders. And you know, when this nuclear strike comes, our leaders will claim to be innocent. They didn't know the Russia and China. They're lying. And they'll point the finger at Joel Skousen, who said, Joel Skousen says, we were responsible for this. Lock him up. You know, you lock up the dissent. And people believe in conspiracy. Lock them up. That's going to be the great thing that separates society after it knits back together. But something happens before society starts to knit back together, because remember, Russian and Chinese nuclear doctrine says throw an EMP strike at the country 10 minutes before the real bombs fall. And a lot of people say, oh, you don't need to throw the real bombs, just do the EMP strike, and that destroys it. No, it doesn't, because the military is hardened against EMP. They'd be able to counterattack with just an EMP. That's why there'll be physical strike after. So if you see all the electricity go out, no television, no radio, you got just a few minutes to get into protection. Now, actually, you have more time than that, because unless you're actually in a nuclear strike zone, which is a 5-mile circle around Hill Air Force Base or Tooele Army Depot or, heaven help us, that NSA facility. The only target in the NSA that I hope gets taken down. And they'll probably do that, because they don't want to have all of that communication, left over. But some of these warning signs, if you see North Korea attack in earnest, and don't be deceived by the fact that North Korea attacks the South every 6 months, just with little minor attacks, just to keep them guessing. If you see a major attack, you got a week, I believe, before the nuclear weapons start to fall. So that's the time to really look at the warning. If you have an EMP strike and all the electricity goes out, you've got a matter of minutes before the weapons fall. And then you want to watch the winds to see which way the wind is blowing. If we're coming from the northwest, this county is going to get hit from fallout from Hill Air Force Base. If it's coming from the south, it may take 2 days, but you're going to get it from Area 51 in San Diego and other places like that. Okay? So you watch the wind and you calculate the speeds, and you got to know how to get to safety. But you do need to have fallout protection. And a lot of people say in a rather apathetic way, well, we're all going to die anyway, so why try? Why prepare? 50% of Hiroshima survived. 50%. Now, they wish they were dead. They were sicker than dogs. They had radiation, but they survived. So don't count on being able to die. No, I'm serious. I get so many people, I'm going to die. So it's apathetic. Nuclear winter's coming. Won't be able to grow anything. Listen, fallout from nuclear weapons dissipates in about 2 weeks. So you got to survive for 2 weeks. Now, probably longer, because there may be more than one hit later on. So you may get waves of fallout. You may get fallout from Japan. Okay? So you have to be prepared. You've got to have a meter. And it's not something I know you want to do, but it really is important to do. Because if you want to be a light to other people after the war, if you want to rebuild society, which is where my hope lies, is what's going to happen after this. I don't think we're ever going to win back our country as a whole. Because first of all, we've lost the majority. And the government's making sure that with the illegal aliens, we're going to get a wave of majority against us. You know, we may have one more election, 2016, because there's such a backlash against Obama where the Republicans may win. But we've already lost the majority of people who are constitutional conservatives. And you're never going to get it back in terms of the whole country. Okay? So you're going to have to think in terms of conserving liberty in smaller pockets, smaller divisions. And I think that's where this silver lining I mentioned works. Because when you all of a sudden have EMP strikes across the nation and the whole grid goes down, within 1 week, every urban area is in massive social unrest. And people have to flee. You can't stay there unless you want to live in a Mad Max scenario. You've got to flee. So the Lord may well be able to drive out the good people like you who are in LA and San Diego and Texas and Dallas and New York. There's no job to keep them there. You know, in my book, Strategic Relocation, I talk about all these types of threats and how to prepare against these. I always get people, well, I just can't leave because of the job. And I understand that. In Y2K, when people left their job and went out in the boondocks, unwisely, without enough money, they ran out of money, self-sufficiency is expensive, had to go back and reestablish a job. But there's not going to be any job left after a nuclear war and total social unrest. So you are leaving those major cities is going to be pretty permanent. And I think that's where the blessing of the Lord is. Through inspiration, I think he's going to lead people to areas of safety where they'll be, will have new majorities of people who think like you because they'll be banding together. I'm hoping that people remember what I wrote in Strategic Relocation because they'll know that I'm pointing them here to the Intermountain West. That's where to come. That's where we're going to build a new society. And if there is a rebuilding of the Constitution, you need to do it right this time. Now, a lot of you come from the point of view of my uncle, who was a great constitutional scholar, W. Cleland Skousen, wrote the great masterwork, Miracle of America on the Constitution. But I can tell you that the establishment likes the Constitution too. So just restoring the Constitution isn't going to do it. I'm very serious about this. And why isn't it going to do it? Because all the establishment lawyers say, what's different than now? We know how to interpret the Constitution. We have 150,000 case laws that interpret our Constitution. And how are you going to stop them from doing that? Oh, but you've got to interpret the way that the founders, the way the Cleland Skousen did. Well, where is that encoded in case law? Where is that encoded, those that we have to abide by? Well, it isn't, but you should. But we don't want it, because we want socialism. We want all the things. We want the ability to confiscate property, you know, that they have. We want these eminent domain rights. So if you're going to take control of your country again, and I don't mean the whole country, but I mean the pockets of liberty that will remain, you've got to be able to know what the principles of law and how to write a tight legal version of the Constitution so that they can't interpret it. And you do one other thing when you rewrite it, the Constitution in a tight legal language. The case law doesn't apply anymore because you changed the language. And you suddenly solved the problem. You now have the majority. You say, this is the document we want to establish as the Constitution. It's based upon the old and has the same principles, but it's in tight legal language. Now, I've worked as a political scientist for most of my life and trying to work out how to tighten up that language as a person who's faithful to the Constitution. And so I've done kind of your homework for you. And I've got a DVD that talks about this. It's a speech I gave at UVU. I have some copies here. And you can also find some of my ideas on my website, joelskousen.com, under the Law and Government section. But it's important to think that you've got to understand these principles. It's not for the light of heart. Legal stuff is not easy, okay? It's difficult. There's a lot of jurisprudence and a lot of thinking that you've got to do. But if you don't make the decision beforehand, in the crisis of refugees flowing into these valleys and trying to get people, if you haven't pre-decided what you're going to do, you're not going to be able to do it in the heat of battle and the heat of turmoil when the establishment lawyers are going to be saying, oh, we know how to redo the government. We're going to do it just like we had before. So if you're smart, you'll study and learn. Get your best legal scholars together, study these things, and say, here's how we tighten up the language. Let's prepare the documents beforehand so that when we have a chance, we can do that. Now, I've got several books that I brought with me tonight. I don't charge a speaking fee when I'm here locally because I could, so people can buy some of my books to support my work. Most interest relative to this nuclear war that I mentioned would be two books that I've done as a high security architect to help you out. These two books cover everything about doing every kind of self-sufficiency There is, including self-sufficiency and high-security residences and retreats. This is the big secure home Bible that I've written. 700 pages covers everything from fallout shelters to, but it's new construction and remodeling here. For those of you that have basements, this is the key book, because this tells you how in an existing basement to do a concealed safe room and fallout shelter in an existing building, and it doesn't cost but a few $1,000s. And these are do-it-yourself books, tells you how to do it yourself, all the architectural details are in them. And all of these books are $10 off, so this is normally $25 and it's only $15. And you don't pay for shipping, so if you want to get some of these things, get them here. This is normally $45, but it's on sale for $10 off. And for those of you who want to relocate, even though this is one of the safer areas, or have relatives who need to relocate, this is my bestseller, Strategic Relocation. And the part in it about the strategic threats is fascinating too. It makes a good gift if you want to help people understand what are the problems that we need to prepare for. And then the last little book I have is 10 Packs for Survival. It's 10 areas of survival lists, including a dynamite barter list. That's really good to have. And these are just a few dollars. In addition, if there are any of you who are interested in homeschooling, my wife's mother wrote one of the best phonics reading systems, and my wife has several of those sets at a very steep discount. Would you hold one of those up, Marilyn? Anyway, 51 reading books, all phonics and things, great for teaching the kids to undo the bad reading they're getting in public schools. Now, let me just finish before I open up for questions and give you, as I say, some hope. I don't want you to have false hope. I don't want you to have false hope that the Republican Party is going to save this country and the next Republican Party is going to save it. It's not going to happen. I just want you to realize, especially people who are my age or older, you've seen us go downhill every single year since 1940s, right? There's never been a year when we've really stopped. Even Ronald Reagan, we went downhill. We had the biggest tax increase in history. We had an amnesty under Ronald Reagan. We had deficit spending in Ronald Reagan. We didn't go uphill under Ronald Reagan. We still went down, but slower, okay? That's the best you can hope for. Slowing down the thing. So don't have hope in the political solution. There is hope, however, locally. You do need to make sure that you put in good constitutionalist-oriented people, especially a sheriff in your counties. You want to make sure that sheriff can protect you from bad federal laws. And certain sheriffs are willing to do that, like Sheriff Mack and his Constitutional Sheriff Association, which I highly support. Very important to get a good sheriff. Get one who's part of the Constitution. Don't, however, do what they're trying to do down in Navajo County. They're trying to take it over with the constitutional movement. And while I agree with taking over a county with the Constitution, you don't advertise it like that. You don't go up and say, we're going to come to take over your county. What do? You just gin up all of the opposition. Everyone says, these are like the Rajneesh in Oregon coming to take over. These are like the Mormons coming into Missouri trying to take over. And it creates tremendous opposition. So just get elected normally, okay? Don't go advertising. We're part of a major movement to take over the county. That's my solution. So when you do that here, just get good people that you can trust to run for election, and then they start to defend constitutional principles. I think that there is hope here. I don't believe that the Lord will leave us hopeless. He has promised that there will always be a remnant that is saved. And we are that remnant. You are to be congratulated for at least having the wisdom to be able to sense in your conscience that something's wrong in the nation. And not to trust those that promise you the words. That's one of my biggest messages to people, is that we still, even in the constitutional conservative movement, have a long way to go in terms of listening to conscience. Our people are still too overweight. Their children are undisciplined. They go to public schools and they pick up all the bad habits. You lose most of your children, don't you? Very few of you have your children here. Most of you will turn to me and say, I've lost my children. They don't believe. And why don't they believe? Because they went to public schools and they don't even get it in church. You know, the Ezra Taft Benson manual, by the way, for next year has been stripped completely. of any references to his ideas about conservative or the dangers of communism or the other things that would rile other people's feathers. So you've got to train your people. And you've got to listen to conscience to do that. It's very important, because if you want to get warning, I'm hoping to get warned. I'm hoping to warn my subscribers when these things are coming. But if you want to get your warnings or go it alone, you're going to have to remember that you tell the Lord what you think most of the messages of conscience about temporal things, not spiritual things. About your eating habits, about your television habits, about your exercise habits, about your discipline or lack of discipline habits. When you say get lost to the Lord about junk food, and I don't want to hear that, you get penalized. And you can't afford to be penalized in the last days when your life may depend on it. And you've got to make sure that you teach your children self-control. Permissiveness is rampant in this world. It's rampant in the church. It's just a shame. Children are undisciplined. And you're viewed as near criminal if you discipline your children. Now, you have to discipline with conscience. I'm not saying you can't be harsh, because sometimes you have to be very stern to give them a message that's very serious what I'm talking about. And you do have to spank for strong-willed children, to get them to exercise the kind of self-control that they need. So what I'm trying to say is that you may not remember everything that I say tonight, but if you remember one thing, you cannot trust your government. The nation will not be saved, but he will save a remnant, and you've got to listen to conscience about how you and your family individually need to be prepared. I'm hoping that I can help you, and that my World Affairs Brief will help you see through what's coming in the world. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. We're all going to need the help of the Lord. But it is not enough just to follow the leader. You must get your own inspiration. Those that say, I only have to follow, are not going to make it. You must get your own inspiration. Thank you very much. So, I'll take some questions.
This mic isn't working, but if you'll just talk loud.
And I'll repeat the question.
And we will put the recording up on LatterdayConservative.com.
Okay.
So you can let other people know that we're able to be
connected. Ma'am.
In your 10 Tax for Survival, you mentioned cigarettes as a smarter item, which I know are really good smarter items, but I feel really guilty about the idea of cigarettes.
I do too. The question about cigarettes and liquor is a barter item. It is a great barter item. Not so much as it used to be. During World War II, I mean, the whole world smoked and was addicted to it. Not so much, but I personally wouldn't do that either. But, you know, ammunition, anything that can't be home manufactured. Try to make a light bulb at home. Not going to happen. Try to make epoxy glue, a grabber screw. I mean, how do you repair things? Repair is king. Once everything goes to pot, and you've got to stockpile duct tape, grabber screws, nuts and bolts. Get it cheap at Harbor Freight, these whole boxes of miscellaneous nuts, and just stockpile that stuff. It doesn't cost a lot of money, and it's very important. One of the other reasons, by the way, to have a safe room is to stockpile your things in safety from government confiscation. Mark my words, someday governments will come to call for your food storage, because you will be classified as hoarding, even if you can prove that you bought it beforehand. The law of 1950, still in the books, says the government can declare any article in short supply as hoarding and make it a fine of up to $10,000 to be in possession of something. It's an evil law. So you need safe, concealed rooms in order to hide yourself, and also hide people. You know, I've said this before, that you kinds of people and me are the Jews of World War III. It's the dissidents who believe in conspiracy that will be rounded up. You must be able to hide people. Read Corrie ten Boom's book about hiding the Jews in Holland. And there's even better ways to do it, but you have to prepare in advance. Another question. Sir? What's the timetable that says when you're going to happen? Well, you know, we're dealing with multiple conspiracies here. So you can never really predict how a conspiracy is going to operate. But I can tell you this, I do not believe the Russians and Chinese are ready until the beginning of next decade at the earliest. So I think you've got at least 5 years. Now, do we know what the Chinese and Russians have in Berlin? No. The U.S. claims they know, but they don't know. Believe me, they've never been into Yamato Mountain. This underground bunker factory system as big as Washington, D.C., underground. We've never had an inspector into it. You can bet it's chock full of missile weapons, explosives. They're going to manufacture during the war. But the top of the line new weapon systems, both Russia and China, aren't supposed to come online until 2020, 21, 22, 23. If they're cheating and weapon systems never come online faster, really, than that. So I think it's going to be later than that. And the Lord ultimately controls these things. I think he's given us more time. I think Matthew 24 is a very important scripture that talks about people getting discouraged because he isn't coming. They're crying day and night, the Lord doesn't come, and it just keeps going on and on. Many of you will become discouraged if it goes on. That's why I don't say it's coming in 2020. I'm just saying I don't think it's coming before then, so don't quote me and say it's coming in 2020. And it could be longer. The Lord can destabilize Russia and China and make them fearful. They know the U.S. has a lot of secret weapon systems that keeps them unstable. It keeps them worried. Have we stolen enough? Have we got enough technology to beat the U.S.? Now, actually, we're a very high-tech army, but it's very thin. It can go down very rapidly with electronic problems and other things. And they're working a lot on electronic jamming things, taking out our satellites, ruining GPS. You know, as a pilot, we run everything with GPS now. If that GPS goes down, boy, we're stuck up there in the air and suddenly you don't know where you are. Really tough. So that's my best guess on timing. What it really means, the good news is you've got time to prepare. You've got time to switch jobs. If you're in a major urban area, you've got time to get a new job and leave. You've got time to rearrange your circumstances, time to train your children. But you don't have a lot of time. It takes time to do these things. So be earnest in your preparations. Other questions? Ma'am?
We hear from many who have had near-death experiences about natural disasters. The scriptures have details of natural disasters. How do you see them fitting in with what you're doing?
Well, the Lord controls the natural disasters. That's his trick. That's his card up the sleeve. He can pull those anytime. I just want to give a warning about the dreams and visions a lot of you are reading in the near-death experiences. They're not all of the Lord. They're all generally true. They're all about hard times, and that's true, but that's the hook to get you believing in them. There are so many contradictions in the details that they cannot be of the Lord. Okay, so Satan is being given great power to deceive. And the only way to avoid that deception is, one, don't read them. And if you have them, don't share them.
But the scriptures also talk about them.
That's right, and they're very general. The scriptures are very general. And they're very coded. The Lord has purposely made them very difficult to interpret. In fact, I don't even try. And the reason I don't try is because he doesn't intend you to see, have a clear vision of what's coming. He wants you to learn to listen by the Spirit. And that's why I'm objecting to the absolute dependency that people are developing on who's having the latest dream and vision or near-death experience. They run from one to the other. And they don't realize it, but their actual minds are being skewed. They're being affected by it, even if they don't claim they are. I realize that a lot of you I'm offending here because a lot of you are into this. But I want to tell you that people who read scriptural commentaries do themselves great spiritual damage because they just get their mind set in the way that other people are thinking and they don't get new information. And that's what happens when you spend so much time on these blog sites where they're just blogging about preparedness. If you'd spend half that time doing actual preparedness instead of blogging, you get a lot further ahead. And that's where people are spending wasting a lot of time, hours each day on preparedness blogs, talking and arguing one with another. And I don't feel it's healthy. But I don't believe that people ought to share those experiences because there's a chance of deception. You never know until it comes true. I've had visions and revelations myself, and I don't share them because I don't know until they happen if they were actually true or not. So that's the safety thing, is that you should not share them and you should not read them because you will be influenced, and there is deception, a lot of deception involved in them.
What's going to happen in the next year with the price of oil and the economy and you know, the economic war that's already taking place?
Well, I didn't cover this in this speech. I've covered it in almost every other speech I give about the potential of economic collapse. There are those predicting economic collapse based upon the oil price falling because they're basically saying that now U.S. producers aren't going to be able to produce and therefore we're going to lose oil share and it'll go back to the Middle East. Russia, of course, is being hurt, which is a good thing. They're losing $100 billion a day in lower oil prices. Venezuela is literally in bankruptcy and will never recover because of this lack. That's why OPEC, for example, on the November 27 meeting did not cut production. Nobody can afford to cut production. Every one of their budgets require they need at least $100 oil to be solvent, and none of them are. So it isn't just the cost of production, which is low, it's what do they have to produce to feed their socialist benefit-corrupted people. So it's going to be a real tough go for these countries. You're going to see social unrest in these countries through austerity measures, which they'll have to come, but it will not crash the economy. Michael Snyder and Max Slavo said that the derivatives are going to crash the economy because there's so many derivatives based upon the price of oil. This is not true. First of all, oil derivatives are not a big portion of the derivatives, but they are there. What's really happening, you have their futures contracts, which is what controls oil. And so they made the statement, well, you had a futures contract for $100 oil, now it's $50. So the person on the end of that is losing $50 oil, and they're going bankrupt, so it's going to be a cascading effect. Not really. You see, persons with futures contracts that buy it for $100 oil, they immediately turn around and sell it to end users like airlines or refiners at $101 or $2 a barrel. So they've already locked in their profit. So you see, it isn't as if somebody's hanging out there, just bought it $100 and suddenly it drops to 50. It didn't drop to 50. It's incremental. And they're liquidating those contracts as they're going down. So the people who make these claims really haven't thought it through. You're not going to see anything but real benefit, both in consumer prices, for lowering oil. It's just false economics that these things will collapse the economy. Some speculators will get caught, some speculators will get hurt, but not big enough that it's going to really hurt the economy. And remember, the people have been hyping economic collapse now ever since really 2010. Remember the Mayan calendar in 2012 and the bank holidays and all this stuff, and the DHS insiders saying there's going to be a bank collapse. And none of those come true. They don't understand. First of all, those are mostly disinformation people that are feeding that kind of information to Hagman and Steve Quayle and others. But the powers that be are smart. They're going to wait till this war comes before they change the economic system, because then they've got cover. It's not their fault. You know, they could collapse the economy, just pull the money supply, and the economy would collapse very rapidly. Every bank would collapse. But they're not showing any signs of doing that, are they? They're keeping inflation about, what, not 2 to 3%. It's about 6 to 9%. That's the real rate. But we've had that for 20 years, and you slowly adjust for that. So unless they get way high, the 15, 20%, that inflation isn't going to destroy the dollar. In fact, the dollar is getting stronger. What about all those prophecies about the countries that are dumping the dollar? Well, all of those countries were less than 10% of the dollar supply. 50% of the dollar supply is the U.S. economy. That's not going away. Another 25% is the EU, which depends on the dollar to bail them out. That's not going away. They're not going to stop using the dollar. So you see, I realize some of this is technical to go through and criticize, but you know, even people like Peter Schiff, who I have a great deal of respect for, talks about hyperinflation coming. And he says it's got to be hyperinflation. That's the only deck of cards they got left, is to hyperinflate. But they don't have to hyperinflate. That's the point. He's missing. And even if you did have hyperinflation, it doesn't turn into hyperinflation unless you have something which we don't have. It's an automatic indexing of everybody's salaries. You see, How did the Germans have wheelbarrow fulls of 100,000 mark bills? It's because their salaries were indexed. As inflation, their salaries rose. We don't have that in the U.S. So if you have 20% inflation, what happens to your buying power? It's gone. Unless you can raise your prices, you stop buying, and it causes stagflation. Because you can't have hyperinflation under today's circumstances in that regard. And I think they can keep this thing going, keep bailing it out for another 5, 10, 6 years. As long as they manipulate interest rates low, because if you keep interest rates low, then the interest on the debt is very, very small. And they can keep that going. So I think that's what you'll see. You may see a stock market crash. It's way, way too high. But it won't come down more than 20%, and it won't collapse the economy. They'll tell you it is, but it isn't. I mean, even the Depression didn't collapse the economy. And we have much more assets than people had in the Depression. I mean, look at what people have. The Depression, they ran out of their salary. They had nothing in their home. And we got televisions, 2 or 3 cars, you know, thousands of blankets, clothes, shoes. I mean, we can survive a recession far deeper than the Depression found us. Back in the back.
Yes, I understand. It's very complicated. But how they manipulate the gold price?
Okay, how they manipulate the gold price. We saw a big thing last Friday. Last Friday, you had 20,000 gold shares put on the docket. 20 tons of gold contracts put on the market. And that was pure manipulation. And the way that they do that is the amount of paper contracts that don't require delivery are 100 to 1 now. And they trade within the insiders, so basically they don't collect on the contracts. And they know they're not going to collect, they just put them on the market, and it doesn't go anywhere, but it drives the price down for those that are taking delivery. So that's, in the most simplistic form, how they're doing that. But believe me, nobody is trying to unload 20 tons of gold, puts it on the market in one day. Because what does it do to the price? It collapses. And that's why, remember the economic collapse story about the China's going to dump their American bonds on the market? What, and go to zero? They're not that stupid. They're not going to do that. You can't dump things on the market with the price rolled up. So you just lose half your value. So you have to do it very judiciously over time. And that's the point that Paul Craig Roberts made. He said nobody, this had to be manipulation because nobody in their right mind would dump 20 tons of gold on the market in one day. Had to be government doing this, or government, you know, contracting. Now, how do they cover this up? The market controllers refuse to give you the name of who's dumping the 20, claiming privacy. If they would reveal the names, we could find out who's manipulating the markets. But they control the regulators, and so they can keep these names secret so that you can't tell who's doing the phone. These are called naked shorts, meaning they don't have the gold. They're putting contracts in the market that don't exist for them. And that's how they drive the price of gold down. Also, the sell market is public in gold, and the buyback market is not public. And so they can sell and buy back in secret, which doesn't then affect the price. That's how central banks circulate gold, so that it keeps the price low. They do the sales in public, and they buy back private. And by the way, one of the reasons for driving the price of silver and gold down is because the powers that be are restocking their supplies. In other words, they're taking advantage of driving the price down low to accumulate gold. But I'm not real bullish on the price coming back up, so I'm not encouraging people to go out and buy a lot because I think they're going to keep this price down to hide inflation and to keep it manipulated right up until war comes. And you don't want to be holding a lot of gold and silver when war comes because you won't be able to turn it in at all and nobody knows the value. You won't be able to trade a gold bar for $5,000 or $10,000 or let alone get change. If you're going to carry a barter coin, do silver dollars. It's big, fat, and heavy. It's U.S. currency. They don't have to determine the validity of it. That's going to be your best barter coin. Not nickels and dimes, silver dollars. There's no way you're going to take out a quarter that looks just like a regular quarter and say, this is worth $3. People aren't going to buy it. But a silver dollar is big and heavy. If you're going to have a barter coin, that's the best one. Sir?
Yeah, so what are your thoughts on kind of the juice counter, the sort of tetrad blood moons, the
this unique year, the Jubilee, the 70th Jubilee. I mean, obviously, it's a, from the Jewish calendar, right? From the signs and wonders in the heavens. I mean, there's a lot of speculation. What are your
Yeah, I think. I don't believe in any of the cyclical theories that things come in cycles. I do generally in the Book of Mormon, you know, people get wicked and they repent. Those are very general, but not predictable enough to be able to. And I don't believe in the blood moon concept. It's very, very flawed. There's an awful lot of New Age theories about Planet X and other things crashing the Earth and the rising of the seas. I don't think any of those things are come true. There will be plagues and natural disasters, but I don't think till the very end the major natural disasters that may cause things. So let me just say this about the prophecies. I don't deal in a lot of prophecies because I feel strongly that they're traps. I think the Lord set a lot of traps in the scriptures for intellectuals, egotists, like numerology, people seeing his little number and counting up letters and adding two and three and becoming, you know, 666 and other things. These are just little traps that are set to lead people astray. The Lord purposely didn't make any of these prophecies clear because he didn't want you to read it clearly. He wants to test your ability to perceive by the Spirit when things are happening. Okay? That's why the sealed portions of the Book of Mormon were sealed up. And do you know what's in the sealed portion? They're all the prophecies that the great prophet saw from the beginning to the end of the earth. And he sealed them up because he doesn't want you to know. So if he doesn't want you to know, be very skeptical of people who read prophecy like a book and interpret it and says, this is exactly what it means, what is going to happen. Nobody is going to get it right in that regard because the Lord didn't intend it to be right. You're going to be tested in ways that, you know, that defy all of the dreams and visions and all the others. It's going to be harder than you think. You're going to be tested right down to your ability to perceive by the Spirit what you should be doing. And that's really the only important thing. It's not what's going to happen in an earthquake somewhere else. It's what are you going to do to prepare right now? What are the promptings that you should be following to get prepared? And I realize it's not clear. I mean, there's a lot of deception involved. There's a lot of Satan's right there camped on your shoulder and your conscience. The Lord is right there. And he makes you feel nervous about things you're supposed to feel calm about. And the Lord makes you feel nervous about rationalizations that Satan's trying to make you feel calm about. I didn't say it was going to be easy. But the more you work with it and the more you check out what comes up to be true and when you follow things that you felt nervous about, what turns out to be wrong, then you learn. You get good at listening to this voice of conscience. Someone in the back had a question. Yes?
So what countries would you recommend to escape on this? What's the role of the LDS Church in all of this?
Repeat that one more time because I didn't get all of that.
What countries would you recommend to move to as an expat to escape all this? And what's the role of the LDS Church as an institution all of this?
Okay. Well, I spent a lot of time in strategic relocation, the whole section talking about foreign countries. And I've lived in a lot of foreign countries, so I know them very, very well. I don't believe that for Americans, any of them are going to be worth anything in terms of safety, except they won't be subject to nuclear warfare. So you can escape nuclear warfare, but think of this. Let's look at the extant havens in Central and Latin America and South America. And I've lived in most of these countries. Most of them have a very heavily indebted socialist country. They're always in deficit. And most of them live on about 20 to 50% tourist income. What's going to happen to those budgets when all of a sudden there's a nuclear war or any other word and all the American tourists stop? And all of the expats who are down there can't get electronic transfers for the money down there anymore. You're going to have major austerity and budget shortfalls. And who are they going to blame? They're going to blame the blankety-blank Americans and the foreigners. And I'll say, just like in Mexico, where you had twice now, they've confiscated dollar accounts and gave them Mexican bonds in return, you're going to find that in Costa Rica, Guatemala, Uruguay, Argentina, going to confiscate the wealthy and the foreigners in the bank accounts and trade them into bonds. And then you're going to say, I wish I could get back to the United States. It was 2,000 miles away, and there's no air transport, and there's no way to get back except by foot. And that's why I say, even though you can escape nuclear war by going there, in the aftermath, this is the best place to survive because, first of all, there's only, you number in the hundreds, maybe a thousand in many of these countries, the amount of people who understand the battle of liberty that we understand. We got at least 20 to 30 million in the United States potential resistors that won't go there. And I'd rather make my bed with the millions that potentially can resist because this global new world order will also take those other countries under their control. I think during the war, unfortunately, most of the Latin Americans will go with Russia and China. So it won't be nice for expats down there during the war. And then after the war, when the globalists win, you're going to have the same controls that we've got here in America. And less ability to maneuver, less people to join together with and resist. Because I can tell you that based upon the open prophecies that we know about in the scriptures, like the New Jerusalem, where the 45th section of the Doctrine and Covenants says that the New Jerusalem will be the only place on the face of the earth where people are not at war one with another. That doesn't sound like it's very nice anywhere else. That's why the Lord sets up a place of refuge for people. So that in the time when everybody is against their neighbor and there's total chaos, that the Lord will lead out those who, not by edict or call out, as some people claim, but by inspiration individually. And that's the test. You can't get there by yesmanship through a call out. You're going to be tested through hardship. You'll be driven out of society. And that's how you end up with the New Jerusalem. Because you're faithful. You're a dissident. You believe in truth even though it's unpopular. And so you get driven out even by your mainstream fellow neighbors. And that kind of answers or a hint to the role of the LDS Church. I can't tell all that I know about that, but I can say that there will be a severe division within the LDS Church. Those that are comfortable with the mainstream attacking those who believe in conspiracy and driving them out. Because the government, they will want to please and be part and accepting of government, and the government will say, we need to round up these people who aren't supporting our troops. We need to round up these people who believe that we were responsible for 9/11. Or this war with Russia and China. And that's going to drive a wedge between people. Those that want to take the mark and gain acceptance and be able to buy and sell and have their attorney privileges and their licenses and medicine. You won't be able to have any of that, by the way, if you don't take the oath of allegiance to the New World Order. That will be probably, as I surmise, how this mark of the beast will come about. It probably won't be as obvious as the big stamp on the forehead or 666, but it's going to be an oath of allegiance to this global government because that is the great and abominable church. It's not a religion. It's a religion of tyranny. And it encompasses the whole world. And there will be only remnants preserved by the Lord who are righteous and who will be living, and if they're not in the New Jerusalem, be crying day and night for deliverance. That's the purpose of the 144,000, to go out and seek out those that are crying day and night in deliverance and bring them to safety. And ultimately, the second coming of Jesus Christ comes to stop this whole tyranny, which will sweep the whole world, except in the New Jerusalem, be the only place free from it. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. Well, I know from German the site, guys, but this is something different than that. Tell me what it is briefly.
It has a lot of the same concepts around getting away from government and creating a society where everyone is equal.
Well, I'm not familiar with that. I think the concept, as you describe it, that is a zeitgeist, a society of people who, you know, are basically a liberty society where you get along peacefully, and you've got, of course, have rules to do that. You know, you can't do that on a let's just all be nice. There are people that aren't nice. You've got to have laws that basically corral people into doing what's right, and where there are consequences for violating people's rights. You've got to have a proper definition of fundamental rights. That's one of the things that I do in this speech, is I tell you what a proper definition of fundamental rights, so that you can argue why free medical care isn't and can never be a fundamental right, why free food can't be a fundamental right, why free public education can't be a fundamental right. You have to know these things to be able to defend these against the false philosophies that your children are learning in school. But I would not discourage, in answer to your question, I would not discourage anybody from trying to put together and prepare for societies to live together. But I do caution against this. Don't try to join survival societies now. You want to prepare to knit together in the time is right. But if you start doing it now, you get targeted. You get infiltrated. It's like this survival community up in Idaho called the Citadel. The worst thing you can do is say, we're building a fortress out here, and we have these people, we have a walled city here. The neighbors get up in arms. And so it's illusory to try to find this perfect community of like-minded people. I've been in this business for 4 years of dealing with people with preparedness and survival. I'll tell you, they're the most opinionated lot of people in the world, and they just don't get along well with another. I've advised community after community, religious and secular, trying to put together these survival, and it just doesn't work. Because they always factionalize and split apart. So build your communities among who you personally trust. You don't have to live together, you just got to know who you can go to and trust. You don't want to live together, because then you get targeted. You want to be able to, if you're targeted, you disappear and go to your neighbor who's 3 miles away and they don't know where you are. So you see, it's informal networks of people you know that you trust and they trust you. And you don't have to share all your preparedness with it. You don't have to have a communal thing. You just have to know you can share and trust and give and take when you need each other. Ultimately, it's going to be how you perceive and you feel and you listen, as you listen to spiritual promptings, and how you do and get through this period of time. Yes, ma'am.
If you say we should not be in a major urban area, do you call this a major?
No, I don't. But Salt Lake City I do, because Salt Lake City has got a lot of bad elements that will get to pillaging and crime very, very rapidly. In Utah Valley, for example, and in areas where Mormons are, the Mormon communities will knit together faster than anybody in the world, because they have this alternate government system. They got home teachers for every 5 families or so, and they've got then a hierarchy above them, and the elders and the high priests, and it goes to the bishop and the state presidency, the high council. I mean, I don't care if the state government never shows up. Mormons know how to integrate back, and they know how to help other people who are non-Mormons come in. So Mormons will knit together. It doesn't mean that they are prepared enough, though. Mormons think that they all have a food supply, but they don't. Most of them, only about 10% of active people have a real serious supply of food, and probably less than 3% of a full year supply. So there's going to be famine here too. And I think if you remember one thing, now the problem with urban areas is that if there's a total collapse of the grid, there's no food coming in from California, there's going to be famine in this land the first year after war. Even if electricity comes back on, it just takes a long time to get things going back again. So you think about trying to grow a garden in your backyard with all your neighbors who aren't growing gardens, camped around the fence waiting for your tomatoes to get ripe. If you think you're going to harvest any of those tomatoes, you're kidding yourself. And it's just not appropriate to go shoot people who are hungry. So if you're smart, you band together and, you know, get some out of the way land or something where you can grow, or you can grow in private and harvest in private. You may have to band together with some friends and things to do that, but that would be smart. Now, it's better if everybody's growing a garden and everybody's encouraged to do that. But where are you going to get the seeds? You know how many seeds are in Lowe's and Home Depot, and when they're gone? Well, I tell you, when everybody needs seeds, you better stockpile seeds. So that's very, very important. Yes, sir?
Are you familiar with Martin Armstrong?
I am.
Well,
I don't like cyclic analysis. Martin Armstrong actually gets a lot right. But he doesn't understand the conspiracy either, and so he's been in the collapse scenario, you know, too much because of that. It's not that it couldn't collapse, it's just that they've got a lot more power to manipulate and keep things afloat than a lot of people think. A lot of power. Sir?
I think, you know, my biggest concern is we should know better, and so many people are asleep here. We had a 90% incumbent re-election in this last election. You know, and it's just like even talk show hosts will say, well, if Republicans don't get some backbone now, they're going to be done before the next election. And it's like, what is it going to take for them to wake up? You know, and so do you think you see more people waking up here, or is it just going to be kind of this remnant? Some will get in, a little bit will come on. You know, one of the questions I ask people is, do you ever notice when you're in the department store that the same people selling the red Utah blankets and hats and merchandise, and then you look across the aisle and you see the blue BYU blankets and hats and merchandise, and if I'm not wrong, they're both made by the same company. So do you think people are kind of waking up here a little bit, or is it going to get better, or is it going to kind of be what it is?
Well,
President Benson said it might be too late.
No, I think it is too late. I think it is too late. It's not too late to individually wake people up. But remember, as I've said to other audiences, don't try to wake up blind people. If they haven't got a clue, don't bother. Only spend your effort on people who sense that something's wrong. So when they sense something, don't give them the whole dump truck load on the first, you know, image. You know, just meet out a little bit and see how they go along with things. I know I see a lot of smiles there. Husbands looking at wives, and, you know. Yes, you dump on people there, and you don't want to do that. You know? So, but we are picking up more people. Ron Paul's candidacy, for example, doubled the entire libertarian conservative movement. And, you know, while many of the Mormons were all excited about Mitt Romney, who was in bed or who was just lavishing his attention on the CFR advisors, you know, Ron Paul really attracted independents. He attracted the principled people on the left who don't understand what the left does in terms of creating victims. We need those kind of champions, and that's the only reason why people ought to go into politics, not because they're going to win, but because they can use the bully pulpit to convert people. So if you run for office, the important thing is to get the message out. Don't be strident. Be carefully spoken. You're out to convert one person at a time, not win elections. That would be my message to the conservative, the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party, is go for real converts, not for winning. Because to win, you have to compromise, because we don't have the majority. Now, even though we're growing, and every time the government pulls a big false flag operation like 9/11, it grows our movement tremendously. And that's why we haven't had another false flag operation. They just mess up too much and it's too obvious. Okay, that's why they're pulling the ISIS. Now, they had many false flags. These beheadings, for example, were staged. People died, but they weren't thinking they were going to die, and they weren't in the hands of ISIS when they were giving those confessions. They were in the hands of MI6. Agents who had rescued them and then said, before you go back to Britain or the U.S., we want to make this video, which will help really make ISIS look bad. So these people, that's why they didn't flinch when people were going to put a knife. You know, if somebody had a knife in there, you'd be going like this, wouldn't you? Not them. They knew it was fake. And they knew they weren't going to die. And then off camera, that's why it was off camera. Then they show up with their head missing. This is how evil this government is that we have. If they killed 3,000 plus at Pearl Harbor without batting an eye, and 3,000 plus at 9/11, what's a few people to drum up this great international war on terror? And that's what happens. But so we are gaining, but they're gaining more. We are not getting ahead of the business. Because of public schooling and the mainstream media, those two things keep the nation asleep, and they keep them anesthetized. And it's interesting that the alternative media is a real kind of interesting sort, because it does pull the people who distrust the media, but almost half of them get led astray by disinformation and going over the mark. And that's what it takes spiritual deception. I mean, spiritual perception is to not go over the mark not to be able to perceive something nervous. You'll feel something nervous about some of these bogus theories that are thrown out and scenarios. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
What do you think of Rand Paul?
What do I think of Rand Paul? Well, I know his father, Ron Paul, very well, and Ron has a few problems with Rand. You know, Ron does not believe in compromise, but he does believe in giving his son a free hand. He isn't trying to control him. And Rand Paul believes that by compromising with the mainstream Republicans that he can get ahead. He does not yet realize that it's a one-way street. You can compromise their direction, but they never compromise back your direction. So they have given him nothing. But he has... he is preaching the gospel of inclusion too much, a little bit, about bringing in all the people that are attracted to the Democrats. And I just don't think you can attract, you know, benefit corrupted people to your side without compromising it. So I think he's wrong about that. He was wrong for supporting Mitch McConnell for re-election instead of his opponent, and didn't give him anything. But to this to be said, I don't think Rand Paul has sold out. I still think he has pretty strong values. He has not cheated on his wife, so they don't have any dirt on him, so they can't control him. So he will be the one to beat for the establishment. In other words, they have to destroy Rand Paul, or at least marginalize him, if they're going to give us a compromised Republican. As you all have seen, they've been pushing Chris Christie. Chris Christie is really a Democrat in sheep's clothing. Got a lot of skeletons in his closet. And he put his foot in his mouth about this big scandal, but they're still trying to resurrect it, just like they tried to give us Rudolph Giuliani in 2008. You imagine foisting a cross-dressing evil person like Rudolph Giuliani, who was deeply involved in the 9/11 conspiracy, on the conservatives. Fortunately, they didn't buy it. And then they gave you John McCain to keep Mitt Romney from being elected. And remember, the only reason they didn't want Mitt Romney was not because he wasn't bending over to please them. He was. But it's because they didn't have any dirt on him. He hadn't been unfaithful to his wife. They couldn't control him. If he was in the White House and saw the Benghazi stand-down order, not to rescue the ambassador, he would have stopped it. That's why they can't have him Mitt Romney, even though he wouldn't have been good for us. He would have, what did he just come out? Talking us into an amnesty now? He's for Chris Christie, endorsing Chris Christie. He's for Obamacare. He's for the mandate. He did it in Massachusetts. This guy is a real problem. But it's typical. It's typical of Mormons in high places who feel this atmosphere of approval of the establishment. And they feel like they're doing a great service to the church by gaining this approval and being accepted by people. It comes from the Mormon persecution complex. We're not evil with horns on our heads, so we're desperate for the establishment to see us as we are. So desperate that you go lavishing after them and trying to get all their credentials, and that's what we become. We're trying to become loved of the world instead of being a royal generation, a peculiar people. We're now trying to become like the world. I wish we were different, more different. And if you take a conspiratorial view of history, you'll be sufficiently different that the whole world will dislike you. Yes. Are you familiar with Benjamin Fulford? He's a problem. Benjamin Fulford, almost every, he got involved with disinformation insiders, and he bought it hook, line, and sinker. He's an intelligence guy, but almost everything out of Benjamin Fulford's mouth is false. So don't read Benjamin Fulford. Ma'am? Do I see foreign troops evading after an invasion? Probably the only invasion that we have, and it could be. I mean, there could be. But, you know, it's very difficult for Russia and China to have a line of communication across the oceans to try to run an occupation where you have 600 million weapons, which will not be confiscated before this war, by the way. That'll happen. That confiscation will happen during the war. But I don't think Russia and China really are going to try to occupy this country. I don't think The government will bring a lot of foreign troops. I think there'll be plenty of yes men to do their bidding. You know, foreign troops would only irritate people. People who can't hardly speak English trying to round you up wouldn't be good, I don't think. Right. When I mean lines of communication, I mean that's a military term for sea lanes, for bringing troops and material to run an occupation. You've got to keep running back and forth. The EMP will take out all physical, but lines of communication talk about supply. And they can't run a supply train from here without it being interjected. So I think the occupation scenario, if anything, it's going to be Latin America is just surging across the border. I think you're going to see that happen when our borders are down. You know, with the war and the government is incapacitated, I think it's just a free-for-all. It's going to be very, very difficult. Yes, sir?
When you said dreams and visions, are you talking about the book Visions of Glory by John Pontius?
Yeah, I don't believe Visions of Glory is of the Lord, even though there's a lot of truths in it. Satan deals in truths to get you to believe the curveballs and the philosophy. I've read it. I got a very strong spiritual impression that it's not of the Lord. There are some very specific doctrinal errors in it, but the biggest thing that came really strong to my mind is this is too much revelation. Too much revelation. The Lord, it violates the test of earth life to be giving monthly revelation to a person when the brethren have very few themselves. And I'm not saying that the Lord can't do that, because you can quote the scriptures. Your children should dream dreams and all of that, and everyone who believes in dreams quotes that scripture. But they fail to realize the Lord changes the game sometimes. In the last days, you're going to be required not to walk by major miracles and revelation visions, but walk by the Holy Spirit. And Satan will be given great power to show great miracles and dreams and visions. So be very wary of any person who preaches to you the doctrine like Denver Snuffer, that everybody ought to see the face of Christ, that everybody ought to have their calling and lecture made sure. That is not true. There's nothing worse than going and pounding at the door of the Lord and say, I want a direct revelation of my calling and election made sure. Those that really do know their position, Lord, don't need to ask for that. And I don't care if Joseph Smith said it. Joseph Smith said, and he believed that everybody could see the face because he did, but he didn't realize the Lord didn't intend everybody. And it would give Satan a great deal of hold on people to seek for revelation. I don't think anyone ought to ever seek for open revelation. If the Lord decides to do it, let him do it. But just seek for understanding and make your prayers known to the Lord, but don't ever say, I want a vision or I want to see something. You're just asking for the wrong source. And I know four or five very great individuals, including one of my uncles, not Uncle Cleo, who went out to the wilderness fasting and praying to get a revelation, and they got it all right, but it wasn't of the Lord. So be very careful. That's my warning.
So basically, you can speak to more general books like Clint Scalzo's, like Clinton of America, for instance, a more general book like that.
No.
Not even that.
Clinton made some mistakes in Cleansing America. He said, for example, that all North and South America are going to be one big happy Zion society before the second coming. That's absolutely wrong. It'll be hell on wheels just like the rest of the world, except for the New Jerusalem. There is no such promise. But he also made a few others. Remember, he didn't write that fully thing. You know, his kids put it together after his death. But he did make some mistakes. So I'm just saying, even as my beloved uncle, I mean, be careful. I just don't think people ought to write to the church without a calling. Just because if the Lord knows what you know, if he wants you to do it, he could call you to do it. But putting your leadership there and getting a following, and every one of these books has a following, and the Lord does not intend that to be. It doesn't mean that you should be following leaders per se. You still have the obligation to find out for yourself what is true in everything so that you are sure of where you are in life. There's a question in the rear. Yes, ma'am. Oh, yes, Vicki.
happen to be all of America, or Missouri, or Patchen?
It's Missouri. It's Missouri. There's only one New Jerusalem area, and that's what it is. Now, there is this doctrine floating around about every place there's stake of Zion. That may be temporary, but those will be shut down as persecution increases and division and the New World Order gets. Don't count on those things lasting. As I said, the Lord himself said that New Jerusalem is the only place on the face of the earth where people will not be at war one with another. Yes, sir. India is going, India is a very, very corrupt country. The reason India has so much poverty is just reeking with socialism and communism and corruption. Just like ancient China was with all of its dynasties and its corrupt strongmen and things. I think India is going to be conquered by China during that period. And remember, after the Sturgeon War, I think the U.S. makes a deal with China to betray Russia during the war so that Russia's been eliminated. And so I think it's going to be China versus the globalists after that. And the globalists want that, because if you've got a new Cold War threat in China, it gives them an excuse to keep this global military going, right? Not go back to the individual sovereign nation. We've got to have this powerful military to withstand China. I think China's going to absorb India as a client state.
Yeah, what do you think of the sort of phase of rebellion going on?
I'm in favor of course, the states reclaiming their land. The federal government had no business making it a condition of statehood in Utah, Idaho, Arizona, etc., that you can have the land you have. Well, Utah is making some strides towards getting back some lands, but they don't have any provision in that legislation other than to beg the federal government to give it back to them. I don't think they will. And I don't think for a minute that Herbert will ever stand up and say, we're kicking off the federal government off of the land and we're taking it over. And you could do that. You could simply just say, we're just escorting you off this property. This is an out-state land. Herbert is a very weak governor, and he will only do what the establishment does, and they do not want to push this issue because they know that this kind of rebellion, taking back lands, will in fact lead to disobeying other federal laws like the gun confiscation that will happen someday. Our only hope really is that individual sheriffs and the communities that will form after this war, where we will have a majority, because even the globalists will have to respect the majority. They've all made their bed with democracy, and so it'll be hard if we get real majorities willing to stand up and get prepared for them to come in and use overwhelming force. At least that's what I hope. I mean, the Lord's got to provide some protection, and I think he'll use their own doctrines against them. Yes, ma'am. The flu vaccines are never effective. Anyone who takes a flu vaccine is just foolish. The flu vaccine is always based on the previous season's flu. It's always mutated and different. There is a little bit of crossover effect because it's similar in other things, but vaccines in general don't work very well, only in very careful circumstances. The dangers of injecting into your body what's in the flu vaccine is far. Why would you take a vaccine is subjected to all that for measles or mumps or the flu? I mean, if people are old and weak enough that they're going to die from the flu, they're going to die from any normal causes. But, people who take the flu shot only increase their risk dramatically. So don't take the flu shot. Now, in terms of hiding, I can't tell you exactly how this is going to play out. I just know for a surety that this global government and its minions in our own country and state will go after dissidents. And the way that you'll be judged is whether or not you believe in conspiracy. don't be afraid. You know, a lot of people say, well, I guess I should just keep my mouth shut. That's what they would like. No, take a stand. Don't go before people who are hostile to you and try to convert them. As I say, only deal with the people that are sensing something's wrong. But you will be targeted someday. You will see things so horrible about other people locked up that you will cannot contain yourself. If you have any righteous courage at all, you'll have to speak up. When you see, and I'm hoping that my neighbors, and they see the police and a SWAT team come to my house, and they won't say, "Boy, he must be dealing in drugs or something." That they'll have the courage to come up and confront them and say, "Wait a minute, what are the charges? You're not leaving here with him. We know this person. We're not, you know, we need to band together." Solzhenitsyn said, if anybody had showed up against the two agents coming to take somebody away, they wouldn't have been able to take people away. Now that's why they're doing it with SWAT teams, so that you don't dare oppose them. But a lot of these people in the SWAT teams aren't evil, and they won't shoot civilians if you stand up against them and say, "Look, you're going to have to show us what's going on here." Because they do send SWAT teams to the wrong addresses, and they kill people with the wrong addresses, and they get up. So we've got to put a stop to that, and that means sheriffs and local police, we can call them and say, "Hey, we got some federal SWAT team, you've got to get over here and defend us," and be willing to do that. But in terms of hiding, I think there will be a necessity to hide people someday, and I think there's going to be an underground that you have to develop, because you won't want to take the mark or have the new global citizenship that allow you to be or run your own business. You may have to have some people be above ground that can help the underground survive. I can't reveal all that I plan on doing it, because that would be unwise in a public, you know. But each one of you need to think how to recognize when somebody's coming, and if you're a target, for example, how to get advance warning, how to know, how to have people warn you, etc., have kind of a communication thing. One of the nice things about ham radio is that you've got digital ham radio now, and you've got encryption. So you can send transmissions to Dibber that the NSA is not monitoring, because you can have frequency levels low enough that they'd have to be right between you and them to monitor. But you can get encryption through digital packets, just to zip a message to somebody with a ham radio, downloads to their computer, and you can talk to each other. So there's ways in which you can develop means to communicate in hiding, and I think we'll have to be good at it someday. Sir?
Speaking of those means that you're talking about, are there any resources or sites,
there really aren't. You have to pick and choose and find, because if anyone put it out open like it is, then
I do see the conflict, because that would be true, really, but along the lines of those closest to the source would be ham radio.
Yeah. Well, ham radio outlet's probably the best place to start. And they've got a staff that, you know, can tell you all about every kind of digital things. They have offices all around the country. But your best way really is to get together with the local ham radio clubs. These people are especially the old timers. They know about all this stuff. And it's better to get, you know, hands-on training. It's easy to get a little ham license for the handhelds. It's harder, a little bit harder in knowledge to get the long distance stuff, which you'll need someday, and to get into the digital realm. But as I say, working with the normal ham radio clubs is, I think, the best source that I could send you to. Yes, ma'am.
Will civilian life be in danger?
Well, it will be someday. I think when you do what's right, you get certain blessings and protection. I am careful. Try to watch out, but I haven't had any overt threats yet. Yes,
I have censored an initiative in South Korea, and you mentioned Korea quite a bit. When do you think that the North Korea will, I guess, pull the trigger, so to speak? And the other thing I was wondering is if you've heard of Jonathan Kahn.
myself, I'm not familiar with that. There's no way to tell when Korea will move on South Korea because they'll take orders from China. China is not the peace broker between Korea and the West. It's the handler of North Korea. And when China's ready, they'll sic Korea, North Korea on it. But I, as I say, I don't expect it anytime soon. Yes, ma'am.
Can you talk a little bit more about poisoning of their foods? Can you talk a little bit about all what's going on? I know fluoride is being put in a lot of different.
Yeah, it's really bad. You know, fluoride is bad. I can't speak to a lot of the details, you know, about the things. A lot of this is because of money. You know, the fluoride came about because of the industrial fluoride waste. They wanted to have a place to sell it, and so they conjured up this fluoride theory. It's just really bogus. Any dentist that pushes fluoride upon you ought to seek a different dentist. Because they're, or, unfortunately, most of the dentists used to swear by amalgams. All the mercury stays in there. There's no problem with it.
Sorry, you're selling me that money.
Oh. That was my son Andrew, by the way, co-author of the strategic relocation. So, but I can't get into the details. There are a lot of, there is some hype involved, you know. It isn't that a lot of people are trying to actually literally poison. There's a lot of greed involved with GMO. I mean, literally, the GMO crops want to lock up all crops so that it's illegal to save seeds, and they're trying to get to that point. And this is just the most evil kind of corporate control that there is in that. So we've got to, you know, fight Monsanto every way that we can. Yes, sir. Yeah, it's cross-pollinating. All the GMOs are cross-pollinating the trials all the time, and that's why Mallory went to file suit against that to stop that. And of course, the courts are controlled, and so Monsanto is winning in the courts, even when the people vote against that. But yeah, the cross-pollination is very real, very dangerous. It's going to be very difficult to ever have any pure crops. That's why you don't want to get in your farm. And everybody in Utah, unfortunately, is buying GMO alfalfa now. Because they can, it's Roundup ready, they're spraying all this Roundup on it, and it's just killing the fields and the crops. And it's very, very dangerous. I guess Tom's giving me the signal that we need to close, and it's been a real pleasure to be with you. Thanks for staying the long hours. And,